Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, partner Gabriel Montoya, the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. It's been a minute. It's been more than a minute that we've been back on the air. But hey, we're here, and we're going to end it with this week's show here on Leaving in the Ring. A lot of boxing to catch up with, so we didn't book really a whole lot of guests just because of the fact that there's a lot of things to talk about, catch up with, and to maybe have some dreams of what's forthcoming in the year 2013. First off, the number 13, you know, go to the casinos and stuff, they don't have a 13th floor, they're missing, or, you know, certain things, superstition. I'm wondering here, Gabriel, if, you know, having number 13, does this mean everybody's going to have bad luck next year?
You know, I'm not much of a superstitious guy. You know, I don't believe in the black cat or any of that stuff. So I think we're going to be all right with the 13. But we'll see. We actually had a pretty good year this year. You know, the last couple of years, it seemed like we weren't quite getting what we wanted. Manny Floyd not happening overshadowed everything. But 2012 was an excellent year for boxing. We had some great fights, some unexpected twists and turns. A superstar getting knocked out cold. It was just a hell of a year. I personally had an interesting year. up and down and banned and not banned and banned and then not banned. I've been banned twice in a year. I think that's pretty spectacular. I don't know, man. I
know. What are you going to go for this coming up year? You're going to go for three, maybe four bans and stuff, you know, because here's the problem, because every time you get banned, I get banned.
That's funny. Yeah, I think this year will be kinder and gentler. We'll see. You know, I think.
You think so?
There was a lot of learning, I think, from Golden Boy. They were kind of panicking in a lot of ways. Ban him. No, bring him back. Ban him. You know, I think this...
Oh, damn it, he was right.
Yeah. Wait a minute. That wasn't our contract. You know, I don't know. We'll see. Sorry about that.
I heard that, you know. And let's catch up with some of the fights. I had a chance to go down to Los Angeles for the Amir Khan and Carlos Molina fight. And, you know... We didn't have a chance to give our predictions, but we did have a chance to watch it live, and I did have a chance to throw it up on Twitter that I thought that Carlos Molina was going to, you know, pull it off. I thought, you know, with enough pressure and the right amount of pressure against Amir Khan, he did land some good shots against Amir, but Amir with quicker hands and a little bit more subtle. Having Virgil Hunter on his corner now, and I always thought that he needed somebody to really calm him down from the amateur to the amateurish style that he brought to the table. And I thought it'd be a little too early, too soon to tell whether or not Virgil was going to be able to implant that in his mind, in his head. But when you have a stable of an elite type of fighters and you're able to see different aspects, and at the same time, nothing away from Freddie Roach and all that, you know, you have certain type of teachers. You know, you have a teacher that's going to pop, basically show you with the hand mitts and through the motions of it. Well, Virgil's a little bit more of a scholar in terms of teaching their fighters. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, there's some people that need to draw it up on a paper for you to understand it, and there's just some people that can word it the right way, so that you're able to measure it in your mind and then able to transfer it out so that you could perform the way it's supposed to be done. And we kind of saw that. Not a whole lot, though, but I did see some subtleness from Amir Khan. I still think he needs a lot of work. And, you know, some fight fans are saying Carlos Molina, okay, small guy, was the right opponent. Danny Garcia told us that in the media lunchroom room. You know, small guy, perfect opponent. But we did see him get hit with a lot of shots. So it still leaves us to the question whether or not how he does if he gets back in the ring with Danny Garcia once again, or if, or in fact, with anybody else that is his size or bigger.
I think it'll be a learning experience for Carlos. You know, I think it's going to be the kind of fight that he can grow from. It was win-win for him. You know, he goes up, he gets some more exposure. If he loses, well, he's not really a 140-pounder. You know, Khan isn't barely even a 140-pounder anymore. You know, he looks more and more dried out to me at the weigh-ins. I think he's – every time he loses, he kind of gets stuck at 140, having to reestablish himself instead of moving up to 47 and beginning his campaign there. Which, I don't know, the more times he gets stopped at 140 or, you know, the lower weights, the more I kind of question whether or not he's going to be able to handle, like, durability-wise – what's he going to be like at 147? But I thought it was something that Carlos could build on. It was sort of like my friend Vito Gasparin I was talking to today, who fought Jesse Vargas. And he gave a spirited effort, but it was a losing effort. And we talked about it, and he accepted it. It was kind of like the Josecito Lopez loss to Jesse Vargas. It's one where the next fight, he's going to be better for it. He's not going to wait. He's not going to – you know, I think Carlos did the exact same thing. You get in there with a speed guy that you know you can kind of get to, if you get to him, you can hurt him. The problem is all that speed, and you look at him, it's a whole different world, you know. And I think that Vito and I think Carlos both kind of felt that, like, wait a minute, this guy's a lot faster than I thought. And Carlos just didn't start. He started taking chances at the end. You got to take chances at the beginning and lay a foundation of kind of a rough fight. You can't, after you've been out jabbed and you're bleeding and everything, then start taking chances. I think
right.
Carlos kind of did it in reverse, and I think that was a little bit of his undoing. I mean, he was going uphill.
I think, you know what, seeing that fight game plan, I think in some ways, I could be wrong, you know, until we speak to the camp and the people behind the scenes of his camp and all that, but I thought that the reason why they were probably hoping that Amir Khan was going to come out quick, spend himself a little fast like he's done in the past, and then they can execute it. And, and it really didn't happen that way. It didn't fall into the plan of what they were looking for, what I thought they were looking for. And,
yeah.
And I think you're right. It backfired on them. And
I'm sorry to interrupt. I think, but to your point, why that didn't happen is because Khan didn't – you know, he usually gets – he's really basic.
Right.
You know, and then he gets into kind of – he's very pattern-based, and once he's kind of used all the combinations they've worked on, that's it. You know, there's no, like, creativity off of it. Now with Virgil, I didn't see the creativity, but it seemed like he used his tools in, like, little bursts.
Right.
You know, and so they never really got used to his pattern, and he was able to, like – maybe his punches are – there's no mystery there, but when they're going to come now is the mystery, and I think that's – that's going to serve Khan well. I'd like to see two fights down the line.
I've always thought that Khan threw a flurry of punches, and they were just flurries of punches. Wherever they land, that was where it's going to be. With this one, it was a little bit different, you know. And I think that's what he needed to learn from a trainer that was going to show him how to be collective. And that's a big importance, especially with a guy that has quick hands a guy that does like to use speed and footwork and use fast feet at the same time, is that you got to know when the timing of yourself, you got to know when to strike and when not to strike. And, you know, and when you got the hand speed, you should be able to get away with a lot of stuff. Going back with Danny Garcia with that over the hand right, getting caught numerous times, you would think with a guy with his talent should have been able to figure, I need to tap and move. Tap and move, and he didn't do that. He stayed, and he always tried to look for the perfect picture after he painted it, and he ended up paying dearly for it. Anyways, fight fans.
Damn you, mute button. There was a couple times he got hit with I'm still trying to get everything, like, you know, situated.
Back in the mix, back in the mode, huh? Back in the radio mode.
Exactly. But, like, he got caught with a couple flush, like, all the way through his face, left
right.
Hook, Molina. You got to fix that problem. I mean, you're going to take shots, but he still kind of waits around and takes a picture after he lands a combination, Khan does. He needs to learn how to get out of there and to stay kind of a little looser, a little more – there's a relaxation that he just doesn't have. He's very tense, and so when he gets hit, it's like he gets hit with all of it. He doesn't, like, roll with it, you know? Certain things, I mean, some people just don't ever learn, you know? Even Oscar, remember he was talking about that, although Oscar always had something new up his sleeve. He talks about, oh, I'm finally, you know, after it's like two fights before he retires, I finally learned how to relax in the ring.
Right. No, yeah, I remember that. I remember that, you know.
Thing to say, you know. But some people don't. Some people are always tense. Oscar was always kind of a tense fighter.
Yeah, he was. And thanks really quick to Golden Boy and Deportes, Fox Deportes, for putting on the marathon of Golden Boy fights on Christmas Day. It kept me occupied and had a chance. I had to go visit family. So visiting family, you're sitting there and, you know, not everybody. We don't all have the same interests. So it was able to keep my interest. I'm one of those guys that need to be moving or standing up. The only thing that's going to sit me down is a good boxing match. And we've got a lot of calls here on Leaving the Ring. You guys want to call in, 347-215-7598. Got to tell you, man, really quick, on the behalf of myself and Gable, we miss being on the radio. I mean, we were itching to get back on. We apologize for the past 2 weeks of us not airing Leaving the Ring on Thursday night. I know I messed up. We messed up a lot of people's schedule. We got a lot of emails. I also want to thank the folks that were hitting me up and asking me if I was okay. I was fine. You know, just had an accident at work. But I'm a man of steel. I'm back in the mix, back in the mode and stuff. But let's patch in some fight fans really quick here on Leaving the Ring. I want to talk about the past week in fights and hear their take about what has happened. Now, I definitely want to get into the Manny Pacquiao, knockout of the year, stunning knockout of the year. And
sweet Buddha, yeah,
man.
He knocked him out.
Big time. So let's patch in our first caller here, Miguel, who wants to talk about Eating Crow. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
What up, guys? Actually, you guys
what
hear
up?
Me?
Yeah, I can hear you perfect,
yeah.
Brother.
Okay. Hey, I wanted to say, yeah, I did have to eat some crow on that because last 2 weeks ago I called in and was doubting your prediction, Dave, and now I got to eat some crow. But, yeah, I did not expect that, dude. When I saw him get knocked down the first time, all I saw was, like, I saw those little rings from Sonic the Hedgehog come out of his face. It was weird.
You know, I think he was more surprised with that first knockdown, which was set up by a beautiful, you know, a feint to the body. And that's one thing I used to complain about, I think about a year ago. I used to always say, like, you know, there's a lot of things that are missing. Subtle things that fighters are not doing nowadays that could really benefit them is feints. You know, a look of jabs, you know, throwing the jab out differently all the time. Those little subtle things the old-timers used to create miracles for them. And we saw that with Juanma Marquez against Manny Pacquiao. He feinted him, he went right over the top, and he caught him. And even with the knockdown, and you saw that it was a clean knockdown, it was a hard knockdown, he had the face of surprise. Not being dropped, but his face was like, whoa, like, where did this come from, and how did you land it? And goddamn, where did the power come from behind that? I mean, we kind of know, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Hey, man, I got to commend Marquez for his patience, too, man, because he was kind of getting waxed, like, you know, within the last, you know, the fourth or fifth round, even the sixth round, he was kind of, you know, getting the better of him.
Right.
And he just stayed patient, and then he connected with that right hand, man, and Manny looked like he was, you know, he got hit by a tree or something. It was weird.
It was nasty, man. It was like the Hatton type of deal. You saw it, and for a moment, you're like, whoa. I was like, he's going to get back up. Like, you know, I got an email from somebody, one of our listeners, and he goes, what do you think, Dave, about the heart situation here? You know, Juanma Marquez gets dropped four times by Pacquiao. Do you think Manny didn't have the heart to get back up? And my answer to that was that there's a different type of heart. He got knocked out. Exactly. There is no heart behind that. He had the heart to go after Marquez and to pursue him and try to put the pressure, and that's what got him caught. You know, there's a big difference. I think if Marquez got caught with a shot like that, he wouldn't have gotten back up, you know.
If your heart, it doesn't even exist if you die for like 30 seconds. I think Manny Pacquiao died for 30 seconds.
Yeah. He did, man. I almost saw. I remember that movie, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, when the weasels are dying. We saw that for a moment, you know. And Manny was just pulling his spirit back in. He's like, no, dude, I can't go like this. I can't. And I got to applaud him saying he wants, you know, a fifth fight with Marquez. I mean, how many guys?
Don't do that.
You know what I mean?
Well, I think it's only fair. I mean, there've been four tries. I mean, Marquez came really, really close, and then he finally, you know, gets the knockout. I think it's only fair to let a guy give a shot. I mean, I think that's Manny's kind of only shot at redemption, is to go and try to knock this dude out. And if he can't knock him out, you know, then, I mean, you know, they've had four tries. I mean, it's I don't think anybody should be, I mean, they should be surprised by the one-punch knockout, but I don't think they should be surprised that finally Marquez was able to kind of tip it a little bit, because all this whole time, I mean, Manny, I didn't have Manny winning the last two fights, you know, and the first fight's very, very close, you know, so I'm not that surprised. I'm even less surprised by boxing fans with their pictures of Pacquiao planking everywhere, all the jokes. There's a certain period of time where it's like, okay, dude, you got iced and you're going to have to deal with it. But it seems pretty nasty. It's pretty mean. And there's a lot of, see, he wasn't that good all along. And I just think that's super unfair. We ask these guys to do the impossible, to constantly put themselves at risk, and then we just denigrate them as soon as they show weakness. I think it's highly unfair. Boxing fans are the most brutal of all fans.
I think there was a lot of Pacquiao haters, though, too, and a lot of Mexican people, you know, were getting pissed off at Pacquiao because he was knocking out all the
right.
Mexican dudes. So,
oh, yeah.
Of course, they're gonna rejoice right now. They're probably making all the damn pictures.
Like Steve Kimball, the executioner's dead. You know, it took him all this time, and they finally got that guy. You know, I can understand that. You know, I mean, it's not like they're like the Eagles fans throwing snowballs with batteries in him at Santa, but it's still pretty rough. I mean, it's just the way it goes. That's just life in boxing. But
absolutely, yeah.
You know, I think it's funny. You mentioned the Mexican fans and. You notice this whole Memo Heredia thing and the cloud of suspicion, and you know, you hire a guy like that, and you kind of get stuck with it. That's kind of the deal. But I notice a lot of guys are all of a sudden fans of Memo Heredia. It's become a very partisan thing. You know, oh, Victor Conte can be a cheat and come back, but Heredia can't. And I just wish people would get the facts and just kind of try to explore the facts. I'm not saying I have
them,
but they should do that before they just start blindly following people because they're Mexican too.
Well, you know, that's the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's what makes our sport so unique sometimes. And at the same time, it's like a back slap in the face and stuff. It's because so many people fall into the factor of just nationality. What, you know, I mean, you get guys who are like, I was checking out YouTube and they're like, yeah, this is what happens when you go after a Mexican. I'm like, oh, dude, I mean, a lot of us have been knocked out too. Why are you acting like, you know, you're the one in the ring fighting? You know, most guys don't even have most of us that watch the fights, we don't even have to step into the ring. You know what I mean? I mean, a fly can bump into our face and we're whining about it right away. Like, oh, it got in my eye. It got in my eye. You know, I just tend to just kind of ignore it, you know, and just kind of move forward with it and stuff. I like to see great fights and great fighters. That's just the bottom line, you know. To me, that's the sport. You know, I've been in heated arguments with family members that are Mexican. They'll be like, oh, you don't support Julio Cesar Chavez Jr.? You're not Mexican. Okay.
That's why.
I'm Mexican then. You know, it's kind of whack like that, but hey, it is what it is. Anyways, hey, Miguel, thanks for tuning in, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold. I'm going to patch in another fight fan, okay?
All right, guys, take it easy.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Happy holiday. That's actually, you know, most people don't know that, is that Alfredo Angulo was in the INS all that time because he refused to say he was a fan of Julio Cesar Chavez. as soon as he did, they gave him his green card. They're like, all right.
They're like, all right, you're out of here now, buddy.
Yeah. You're Mexican again.
Yeah, exactly, man. let's patch another fight fan here. Our homeboy CT wants to talk about possible Mayweather versus Guerrero. Very possible on May 4th. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what's up, guys? How was your Christmas?
Christmas was good, man. You know, Santa gave me the normal stuff, socks, and more socks.
Thinking about this. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Gabe.
No, go ahead. That was it. That was as exciting as my Christmas got.
I got a box of tea for Christmas. That's about it.
Nice.
I've been thinking about it. You know, I think a lot of people probably doubt Guerrero, but I think it's a pretty tough fight for Mayweather. Due to the fact, you know, it shows that Guerrero, dealing with what he did with Berto, he's got some dog in him. You know what I mean? I didn't think Guerrero had that type of fight in him. I thought he was, you know, the normal boxer, like how he usually is, you know, boxer, puncher. But, you know, he showed he's actually strong. Not to say that he would probably do that against Mayweather, but he shows that he could do that. He's very versatile in the ring, and he's a hungry fighter. You know, he's always been one of those fighters where he's always feel like he has something to prove because he hasn't had that respect. And I think that's what he's fighting for now. He's here to show, like, you know, what he can do in the welterweight division. He never had that big coming out fight as a lightweight because nobody really wanted to fight him. You know, but he showed that, you know, he's a pretty good fighter, and he's a good welterweight. And I think he's going to test Mayweather in some sense, him being a southpaw, rangy. Like I said, he can force the issue, you know, push Mayweather against ropes. And, you know, Guerrero has pretty good heart as well. I mean, I know what he did against Jordan, but to me, you know, what he did with Berto, just not a lot of fighters would go through that.
No, not a lot of fighters would go through that. And, you know, too, is I had a chance to, because Guerrero and his, you know, family and friends and his, you know, his people were at the Amir Khan and Molina, and I had a chance to sit down and speak to a number of them, and we kind of discussed the whole Berto plan, you know, and it rolled into Floyd Mayweather. Of their, by no mistake are they looking at, well, we beat Berto, we definitely can beat Floyd Mayweather. They're really right now in the drawing board of how to beat him, to figure out a plan, a good game plan, and not just rely on size, what other fighters have done, of trying to put pressure the way Castillo. These guys are actually really thinking it out. And that kind of more or less impressed me a little bit more and made me think, you know what? This is going to be a good fight, because you have a guy that's not sitting back going, well, I'm going to come forward. You know, I'm young, I'm stronger. They're not looking at it like that. They're looking at, this is my way of graduating to be a great fighter by facing a great fighter and giving them all we can get to beat them.
Yeah, that's a great point. And you know what? To me, you know, Mayweather, with a fighter like that, once your reflexes is gone, it's been shown in history, like with Ray Leonard and these fast, quick fighters, once your reflexes is gone, they're pretty much done. And with Mayweather, the last couple of fights with him taking these years off and stuff like that, I've noticed some decline, you know?
Yeah, me too.
I don't know if it had to do with Cotto's style or, you know, Ortiz, the way he brought it. It just, you know, Mayweather won, just proved to the fans that he can brawl with people, but he hasn't been looking too quick with his feet movement. You know, his defense is pretty good, but I noticed a little bit of a, you know, decline, as you could say, but he's still good. I mean, it's going to be tough for Guerrero to beat this guy because he's very hard to.
You know, I've always said that, you know, when a great fighter decides to fight another great fighter, you're not going to always look spectacular, you know. Like, perfect example, Miguel Cotto, when he fought Joshua Kaladi, he didn't look great. It wasn't a great fight, you know what I mean? It was a difficult fight for both of them. And you're going to see stuff like that because it's not that easy to figure out another guy. But when you're fighting subpar opponents or out-of-prime opponents, you're always going to look great. But then when you decide to step it up, then you start seeing the decline. Then you're able to really pencil mark, okay, this is what he's not doing anymore because he's a little behind of what he used to do before. And that's why I think right now the measure for Guerrero to go after him and have a chance against Floyd is perfect timing, you know. And if Floyd was to lose, a lot of his fans are going to say that. You know, he's just not the same Floyd Mayweather. He didn't beat the prime Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Floyd's seen to that. Floyd's seen to that, that those questions will always be there. You know, if Manny and Floyd fought right now, I mean, we'd all be like, yeah, it's a good fight or whatever, but they didn't fight when they were most dangerous. So that fight, to me, you know, people all last year, you know, this year, kept saying, like, when are we going to see it? When are we going to see it? And really, I mean, it's been almost 3 years, guys. It'll be 3 years, like, I think, you know, January, February, that they started those negotiations and they fell through. We're never going to see that fight the way we wanted to. It's the same way we didn't ever get to see Leonard Hagler in their primes, you know. We saw them, but we didn't really see them. I almost kind of feel the way we felt about when we saw De La Hoya Trinidad. They kind of fought. We didn't really see them fight, though. You know, they kind of – De La Hoya gave the illusion of fighting, and then he ran for his life. But Trinidad didn't do much better. He didn't really look great that night either, not as good as he did at 54 when he moved up. It's going to be interesting. I mean, I think if Floyd ever does lose – I don't think he's ever going to put himself in a position to lose or where it's truly possible. I think Guerrero's got a shot to make it ugly and make it tough and make Floyd look like he's been out of the ring for a long time. But because all those things will be true, that, you know, it'll be a rough fight. I think it's going to be a rough and tumble along the ropes kind of fight. Guerrero's shown that he's got serious strength and can kind of has brought his body up the right way. His legs really match his upper body. He's nice and even. I think it's going to be a problem for Floyd. I
believe that too. The only thing with Guerrero, where I got to point out with Guerrero, is he's got to learn not to square up. He has a huge habit of doing it. As a lefty, he actually allows his back foot to move forward, so it shortens up the punch, which is going to just be a disaster for him against Floyd Mayweather, who his right hand is his money punch. And we've seen Floyd throw that right hand. If he's in the zone, that guy could throw it simultaneously three or four times in a row. That's the one thing that Guerrero and his people got to really look at and go, you know what, we got to correct this before, if they get to sign with Floyd Mayweather on May 4th. So, you know, brother, I'm going to put you back on hold. I'm going to pass to some other fight fans who want to join this discussion here.
Thank you.
Let's patch in Daryl, who wants to join on the conversation with Floyd Mayweather and Robert the Ghost Guerrero. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
What's going on, fellas? Long time. The Guerrero-Mayweather fight, I think my thing is I've seen Guerrero and know what his abilities are and know he can make this an ugly fight. But I've also been watching Floyd Mayweather since, I don't know, like 97. And we've seen time and again when there's a real challenge, when he perceives that there's a real challenge in the ring with him, someone who can really push him to the limit, that's when Floyd Mayweather is actually, that's when he's given those performances that we actually remember. And I think that Guerrero can be that type of guy. I think Guerrero could be that guy who could actually present the – I don't think Guerrero's a guy that overwhelming challenge, but I think he knows that that's a real fight. That's a guy that's going to come to fight. That's not going to be an easy win. That's not going to be a guy who we can pot shot all night and you know, throw 30 punches around and get away with that. I think he knows he's going to come to make it a dog fight. And I think that's what we like to see. And that's when we've seen him at his best. When he had to step up and fight Corrales, you know, when he stepped up and fought, I can't think of his name, for his first title shot. Those are the guys when he stepped up. And there was
a long time
with the exception
ago,
of that first Castillo fight.
Right.
With the exception of that first Castillo fight.
That's
a long time ago, man.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
No, I understand that, and I know it's been a while since it's been one of those type of fights,
well,
but I'm saying when
I'm
we've
about,
seen that.
I'm thinking about the Cotto fight, though, because that guy brought Dog, and that guy stepped
up. Oh, yeah.
Up, and he was
but
a
I
problem.
Don't think Floyd
and
thought,
Cotto,
I don't think.
Well, Mayweather didn't seem to have that, like he says in Any Given Sunday, that invisible juice anymore.
Yeah.
You know, where he decides, you know what, I'm now going to the next level. I'm done fooling around with you. And, you know, like he did with Zab Judah, where it was like the first four rounds, he gets dropped.
Right.
And he's kind of like, whoa, wait a minute, what's going on here? And all of a sudden, it was like he just went, boom, he kind of moved and got into the zone and was like, all right, I now see all of your openings, your defense.
He did that with Mosley.
Yeah, and he just kind of all of a sudden turned it on. But even with Mosley, it was measured. With Judah, it was like he completely took over. I don't know if he's got – it's like Jordan when he gets older. Does he have that ability to completely take over the fight anymore? His defense can, but I don't know if he can integrate the offense and the defense as well now. He's either defending or he's attacking anymore. He's not kind of catching you and doing both the way he was doing kind of with Ricky Hatton, which was the trail ends of his prime. With a guy like Cotto up in his grill, he looks kind of – not ordinary. He looks – you know, he's very, very skilled, but he didn't look superhuman anymore. I'll say that. So I'd be curious to see if Guerrero can kind of – duplicate some of the things that Cotto was doing.
I
loved his combinations in that fight.
He did great combinations and stuff. You know, the only thing was my question was you had Cotto with Floyd, and this what I questioned about was the power factor. You know, wasn't able to really put that power behind his punches like he's done before. Because I really honestly thought that Floyd's razor sharp combinations was going to bust his face up and split, you know, and get Cotto all bloodied up. It didn't happen like that. I'm wondering though. With Guerrero, you know, Guerrero has been known to cut. He's got scar tissue over his eye. That's the aim that he's got to go for, you know. It's a tough fight, I think, for both of them. I still haven't really kind of soaked in it, believing whether or not Guerrero can really be a major, major threat or if Floyd would look at him as a major, major threat just yet. I'm not sure.
Okay, on the real quick, on the Cotto tip, I'm with you on that, Dave. I don't think Floyd's power carries up past 147. I mean, period. He just, to me, the both of the fights I've seen at 154, he looks feather 50. He's not a hard punching welterweight as it is. So I think that had a little bit of what went on in that Cotto fight, and the simple fact that he's getting older. I mean,
he
can't get past that. Yeah, he's getting older. So, you know, it's going to come a time where you can't hit that switch, where the Lakers got to a point where they just couldn't hit that switch anymore, you know. So that time is coming sooner rather than later. You know, nobody lasts forever. We saw that happen with Roy Jones. One other thing, and I'm not saying this is a fight that I want to see. I'm not saying it's a fight if anybody wants to see. But from a promoter's point of view, do you think, and I think it is, that a Mayweather Marquez 2 is viable at this point after he beat the guy that people perceived that Floyd Mayweather was afraid to fight?
You know, I know a lot of the Mexicans would buy into it. So as a promoter, Floyd, who obviously thinks like a promoter, I don't see why he wouldn't want to, you know, get his hand in the cookie jar about that one. You know, it was an easy fight for him for the first time around. I don't really see – I know a lot of folks can get mad about me saying this, but I really see it being the same thing we saw last time. You know, yeah, Manny did move up in weight, but look at the oppositions that he moved up and he faced at 147. You know, and with Floyd, he is a bigger guy. You know, let's be honest, he is a bigger guy. He's more loose.
Yeah.
Styles make fights. You know, Marquez had a perfect style with Manny Pacquiao because the guy's aggressive, comes forward, he leaves the obvious openings for you to attack. With Floyd, it's a little bit different. You know, and the counterpuncher and the counterpuncher, they just don't mix. We saw that the first time around. The dance it wasn't that great. I personally don't want to see it. Don't care for it. I don't think they need to do it again. You know, I'd rather see a younger guy, a young gun like Guerrero, try to go after him, because the fact is this, is, you know, with Floyd campaigning for the last couple of fights at 154, even at 147 with Victor Ortiz, there was a little something there that we didn't get a chance to really see, which is him being at a solid 147 and to see whether or not he could still perform at 147. We saw him getting backed up. We saw him getting ruffled up by a southpaw fighter. We didn't really see whether or not he can maintain the punishment and the pace that a younger, stronger, and a hungry 147 guy can do. Victor threw that out the door. It burned up in his face. We saw what happened with the kisses. With Guerrero, I'm really curious. There's some pros and cons for both of these guys, and I think that's the more curiosity that fight fans should want to sit down and go, this is what we should see, competitive fights. Not old guys going after another old guy. Let these younger guys have their day in the sun.
Yeah, you can sell the fight for without question. I think that's a little bit to your question. You know, do we want to see it again? I really don't. But you could sell it again without question. But then you have to really look at the way Marquez fought this fight. You know, we tried to box with Floyd. He tried to box with Manny all three fights. This last fight, he didn't really seem to care about the points. He wanted to land that right hand, and he did. He landed it twice. But, you know, he walked through hell to get it done. I mean, he looked, by all accounts, on his way out. He was getting hurt. He was getting bloodied. His nose was broken. His face wasn't holding up. I don't know if you've ever seen Marquez up close. His face, he's got so much scar tissue, man. A guy like Floyd, you know, he's got all the advantages, size, speed, athleticism, power. I would stay on the outside and just do what I did the first time, you know. I think, you know, Floyd in rematches, I mean, the rematch with Castillo is the one he's got. He was pretty brilliant. You know, I mean, it was boring, but once he kind of figures you out, he figures you out. And I think with Marquez, if his new wrinkle is to just wait around to land that right hand and hope to knock you out, that's not going to get it done against Floyd. Could you sell it? Absolutely.
You'll
have to be Pacquiao. But
you'll end up hearing elevator music with that fight there. You know what I mean? With him waiting with the right hand, you know?
just watch
hey.
Just watch Randall
hey,
Bailey, but would just forget the knockout part.
Right.
That would basically be that fight.
What's up,
one
there?
Quick thing. I want to hear what you guys think about Rosado and Golovkin. My thing is, everybody thinks this is leading Rosado to the gallows, but, I mean, what have we really seen of Golovkin? And I've seen fighters like Golovkin that come in, and I'll take four of yours to give you one of mine because mine is going to do it. But those guys only last so long. It's like a shooting star, and the gasoline burns out real quick. You know, they get on the other side of 30, and it's over. Check it. Check where he had.
Yeah, it's like a good running back, you know.
Exactly, exactly.
You get 30, all those miles kind of do catch up. Yeah. Margarito, yeah, I mean, he definitely – I think Steve first described it this way. It's like Wile E. Coyote when he overruns the cliff. You know, you don't fall a little bit down the hill. All
yeah.
Super fat. You know? But I think, you know, with Golovkin and Rosado, I think it's going to be a lot of these fights where you head into it. It's like Tito Trinidad, Jake Rodriguez. And granted, Rodriguez took him the distance. But you go, you know, this guy's going to have a lot more trouble. Give the star more trouble because he can move and he can box. But Rosado likes to fight as well, and I think Golovkin's power is very real. No disrespect to Gabe Rosado, but I'll be surprised if Gennady Golovkin doesn't knock him out in like 8 rounds.
No, yeah, I mean, I can see that happening, but a lot of people think this is just going to be, you know, a walkthrough, and I think he's going to give the guy what he has. I don't think he's going to last, but I think he's going to give the guy what he has. But
I agree.
Nobody's ever gone through Golovkin's body that I've seen because they're afraid of that power. If someone, I don't know how that body will hold up.
I don't know either. That's going to have to come to somebody that says, you know what, I'm willing to go to that fire, through that fire, to see exactly what degree of burns I'm going to get by trying that out. You know, with Rosado, I like this fight a whole lot. I think, you know, GG is going to have some problems. I think we're going to see that early on. It's all about whether Gennady is able to settle down and cut the ring off. You know, we can see him get a bit over power punching, where Rosado can get a little over happy. You know, if Rosado starts tagging Gennady like the way he was doing Soto Karas, he can end up staying in that pocket a little bit too long. And that's what Gennady's game plan is going to be. It's to allow you to make you believe, hey, you know what, I could take these shots and you could probably beat me. Stay here in the pocket and stuff. This is a fight that has to be fully disciplined. This is a fight you have to understand. Whether or not you feel you may be the stronger guy, do you really want to find out if you're not? You know, and there's some pride there you have to swallow. And that's something that that's why we see fighters do fall apart and get knocked out or get hurt when they should be able to be more of a valid point. And it's because of the pride. The pride starts to sting. They want to stay in that pocket. They want to show that they can go for grit. And guess what? They end up becoming the breakfast grit.
You know, I think Gennady's real, man. I don't think we've seen his best. I think he looks real basic. He reminds me almost in some ways of like a, it's going to sound weird, but like a midget or like a miniature Vitali Klitschko. He's got this very, very specific rhythm. It's his own rhythm. It's his own angle and his own style. And, you know, he's 30 years old. He knows who he is as a fighter, even though he doesn't have a lot of fights. Storied amateur career. And he's really made that transition as a pro. I think we've yet to see the best of this guy. And he looks basic. That's why I compare him to Vitali. He looks awkward, but, like, you could figure him out. And then you get in there with him, and it's a whole different game. And then you get hit by him, and the game gets even worse. I think it's going to be a problem for several years for people.
Just really quick.
At an elite level.
Right. Yeah, just really quick, man, so we don't piss off any listeners. It's little people, Gabriel. Little people. All right? That's all we need, man, is some new hate mail from a new, different type of audience here.
I'm sorry. He looks like a little people version. That doesn't sound as good. A little
it doesn't
people
sound
version
as good.
Of the comedy system.
Well, hey, that's all I got for you, fellas. You can throw me back on mute. Great listening, man.
All right, brother. Thanks, man.
All right, man. Take care.
Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. It's great to be back, man. Really appreciate everybody calling in, talking some boxing here with us. Stephen Cunningham is going to be coming on shortly about 6 o'clock with us here on Leaving the Ring to discuss his loss, his second loss to Thomas Adamick. A lot of folks were calling it high robbery. Really upset. You know, I was one of our friends, Linus and stuff, was going back and forth with me, and I was like, dude, I was just tweeting what I was seeing on the rounds. I wasn't saying he lost or he won, you know. And a few other people too were coming at me pretty hard, thinking that I was saying that, you know, it wasn't that. You know.
Blame your meds. Just blame your meds.
Yeah, yeah. I was on a lot of meds and stuff,
yeah,
you know.
I was
but,
high as a kite, you know.
Yeah, you know, it was a good fight. I don't know whether or not I could say it was a great fight. I thought that both men were very attentive. I thought both men were trying to figure each other out and try to. They were trying to, you know, do what they were being taught from the new trainers that were on their corners. And I thought either one of them didn't want to commit. So when one guy did commit, the other guy retreated, you know. And it was a lot of back and forth, in my opinion. You know, those early rounds, in my opinion, I thought even though Cunningham was using the jab, I thought he was giving some rounds away. Because even when you're using that jab and you're backpedaling, you use the jab to bind him and then throw combinations and land big shots, you know.
Yeah.
And he didn't do a lot of that. He just stuck with the jab, and that's all you saw. And I could see why the judges were kind of penciling in for Thomas Adamick. You know, they saw him putting the pressure. They saw him going for it. They saw that he was trying to make it into a fight. And, you know, it really just it boils down to what do you prefer, you know, if you're going to be judging and stuff, you know. So I didn't give him those first couple of rounds. I gave him Adamic, but I saw him slowly, gradually getting himself into the fight, and he was landing some big, hellacious shots, you know. One big shot in a round, I'm sorry, guys, I can't just give him one big shot and then say he won the whole round. You know, you got to work for it.
There's so many aspects to boxing, you know, especially in a close fight like this where both guys are almost fighting in a similar style. They're looking to get that jab out there, landed, maybe landing behind it, but neither of them really wanted to be in exchanges. You know, they're both older fighters, and I don't think they're looking to get into a Gotti Ward, you know, type of war. And Adamic is a bit of a franchise. You know, it's like, look, I got to keep winning, man, you know, because I'm making money here at the end of my career. I thought Cunningham won, and I felt that he had control in the fight. And when I talk about the different aspects, I felt his ring generalship, I thought it slipped kind of badly in the back end of the fight. But for the most part, even in those first couple rounds, he was kind of warming into his game plan. He was implementing it. And I could kind of give a guy props for that, that they were fighting a little bit the fight that Cunningham wanted to fight. I thought he was landing really good shots. Adamic looks a little tentative to me. And then late, you know,
when those right hands started to land, thought that it, you know, that after that fifth round, that's when I saw the change of guard. You know, I saw that,
yeah.
You know, Cunningham was like, okay, my right hand is working. Let me throw it a little bit more. Let me do this. Let me try this. Then we saw Thomas Adamic now overthinking what he was going to do in his position. And I think that's what made him lose the fight, in my opinion. I thought that Cunningham decided to take over, which was those later rounds. He started seeing the open, and he executed the way he was supposed to. The beginning, to me, it was almost like a fill-out. What should I do? I'm using the jab lock. I'm backing up, and I'm trapping myself on those ropes.
Yeah, I mean, I think if it's, you know, Linus makes a good point. It's like, you know, what did Adamic really do to win the fight? And I think, you know, late down the stretch, I was kind of worried for Cunningham. Kept thinking, you know, he's like a punch away from getting hurt and then something bad happening. But it never did happen. I just, like I said, he was the guy that overall had control. It's how I always look at Trinidad and De La Hoya as a draw. I always kind of think that's fair because now the guy had control for the whole fight or for such a period of time that the other guy didn't match. And in this fight, I felt that Cunningham had the edge in control, that ring generalship was his. But, you know, I think he also fell into that trap of you use the jab and it lands, or you use the right hand and it lands occasionally, and your defense is working and your footwork's working, you're winning. But when you're fighting as the B-side, you got to do more than that, unfortunately. You know?
Absolutely.
I've never believed in that rule of you got to take it from the champ, but you got to take it from the champ. And yeah, I know he's not the champ, but you know what I mean. You got to take it from the A-side.
Yeah. You got to definitely take it from the A-side, the guy that a lot of people went out to go see. Even though you had a good crowd for Steve Cunningham, you know, at least he was able to get people chant USA, which Bernard Hopkins terribly failed when he fought Little Trinidad. You know, he was actually like, come on, man, USA, USA. Nobody was like, nah, man, there's too many Puerto Ricans around and stuff. Don't stay away from that. But, front row, they were like, USA, USA, you know, so that was a good thing. I thought it was a good fight. I like the fact that Main Events is still doing stuff like that and putting them on, cable network TV. It's not free TV because, like myself and everybody else, we pay for our cable here, but it was a good fight. Now, for an outcry of robbery, guys, I don't know. I wasn't like, wow, oh my God, you know what I'm saying? I just didn't see that, man. I apologize for the folks that they think I should feel like that, but I didn't. I do want to see them go at it again. I thought it was a good scrap. I feel, though, that I honestly don't think it was because they were familiar with each other. I think that they were trying to use what they've been being taught. You know, Nassim Richards in the corner now, you know. I thought that had a lot to do with it and stuff.
Yeah, I definitely thought that Adamic. Like you said, they're both a little bit long in the tooth, and so they kind of know each other almost too well, and so there's a little bit too much respect, and they needed to go out and get it. But you know, I thought it was a good fight for TV. I didn't like that it just reinforced the stereotype about boxing. And really, let's be honest, it's just the reality of boxing. It's not really a stereotype for a reason. But, you know, we get on network TV. People check it out. It's as free as TV as you get. My brother's all excited. Hey, there's TV on, you know, there was CBS with the Golden Boy. Now here's this. And then, dude, that guy didn't win that fight. And everybody knows it. Everybody's upset.
Again, and I heard it all. No, and
That's the thing. And then, you know, this is why UFC's taking over. No, it's not. The numbers don't support it. Yeah, but it is, you know, and what can you say? You know, to me, it was a robbery in that it wasn't so close that I was like, you know, I'd be okay with Adam McWinning. I wasn't okay with him winning. I could have been okay with a draw or Cunningham winning. I did not have a case for Adam McWinning. And when the wrong guy wins, that's a robbery. You know what I mean? Like, there's no such thing, well, it was close, so it's okay. It's like, well, you robbed me at gunpoint and only got a dollar. You still robbed me at gunpoint. Robbery. Was it like Campillo? No.
Right. You know? Here's the difference. That's what I'm saying. There's a robbery of, you know, oh, man, I can't believe this happened, you know. And there's a robbery. Okay, let me give you my example, you know. There's a robbery where, dude, I left my phone on the table. Where is it? I don't know where in the hell it went. Somebody took it. And then there's a robbery. Dude, this guy just put a gun into my face and took my goddamn phone. There's two different type of robberies, in my opinion.
Well, you know? Yeah, that's true. Well, I've been robbed a couple times. And I'd say both times I was upset that I got robbed, you know. I actually can remember everything that was taken. But just because the second time I lost, like, more stuff and it was in gunpoint, well, actually, they're both, you know, but still, you know, the first time I just lost, like, a cheap Walkman. Second time I lost some stuff. Both times I was robbed, and both times I wasn't happy about it. So, you know, I think, like Linus says, it's a match. Did the right guy win or didn't?
No, I agree with that. I think that Cunningham did win and stuff, but you know, it was, yeah. Just in terms of the emotion, you know, I saw a lot of people like, "Oh, that's it. I'm not watching boxing again." It's like, man, you're overdoing it. You know, it wasn't this over the top. It was almost like the Bradley Pacquiao thing. You know, it was really over the top, and you know, it's a robbery. Okay, well, I get it. It is a robbery. Anyways, we're going to have Steve Cunningham. I'm pretty sure he's going to think it's a robbery with a gun in my face type of robbery and stuff. And he's rightfully so. He was a guy that was in the ring and wasn't the guy at the end saying, hey, you know what, I'm the guy, you know. So
they never caught those guys either. I'm kind of mad about it.
Probably could find them on Twitter now.
It was a long time ago. Anyways, I think he's going to be definitely pissed. And I think more than pissed, he was sad. It was like, dude.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
How many times has this got to happen? You know, like,
yeah.
I mean, where's his happy ending? You know, I mean, the guy worked hard. And it isn't fair. But that's the sport. It's subjective. I do think, you know, we've had such big scoring issues this year. We have it every year. And we just ignore it. And I'm certainly not going to be the scoring guy. I'm not going to get into judging and try to do with that what I did with performance enhancing drugs. Just don't have the time or the inclination. I think it's a pretty hard job to figure it out. But I wish somebody out there would. I wish a writer would be inspired to become an expert on scoring and really illuminate us on it, because we're so stuck in a as writers and media, we're stuck in like that pattern of pre-show. You know, they announce a fight, we do the press conference. We lead into the fight, we do our articles and the final media day. We do the weigh-in, we do the fight, we do the post-fight, and then we move on to the next fight.
Yeah.
And that's our pattern. And
right.
We just do it over and over and over and over again. It's so easy to be a boxing writer. But I'd like to see somebody kind of go further and go, you know, collate all the different judges that are crappy and put that all together, like, you know, put a guy's record together and teach me how it all works. How does a promoter hire all the judges? Why is there no firewall between the promoter and the judges? I'm going to end up getting into it the longer I talk about it.
Well,
but
here's the thing, though, because we have tried. I mean, not tried. We, you know, I went full-fledged with it, you know, if you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
It's people don't want to talk about it, you know.
They don't.
They shun you out. It's like, no, it's like, it's almost like a secret that's out. Nobody wants to talk about it, and nobody wants to bring it up, you know. It's damned. So don't even think about mentioning it and stuff. And I had a lot of people hang on me, never return emails. They didn't even know who I was anymore.
You were doing it for the magazine, and as I recall, and You know, it is weird. Like I remember Bradley Pacquiao, right? It was clearly a Pacquiao win, and yet Bradley won, and that was my prediction. Was Bradley was going to get a bad decision, basically. And we're in there, and just the mere, just bringing it up that corruption could be involved, that the judges could be, you know, leaning towards the guy that would make more money in a rematch than it would, and it would do better for his career if he won than it would the opposite. And people just got really outraged when you try to say that corruption might be involved. That weird might be going on. They get all crazy. That's preposterous, you know. And I'm not imitating a promoter in particular.
Right.
But it's really kind of funny to me. And I don't know, when I look at I've been putting out all of the links of every story I've written, and I've been collating all that stuff and re-editing it. And when you look through it, the people that end up kind of having things revealed about them in that whole long story, they react exactly the same way as when you bring up bad judging. That's preposterous. How could you do that? Mm. Total denial. It's just kind of interesting. So for the judging guy, or if you continue to do it, or your staff continues to do it, look at that. The people that get really upset, those are the people you need to look at even more.
You know, the thing is, too, you know, and we have a lot of people that listen to the show that are in the business and you know, fans of just boxing itself, and even fighters that tune in and listen to Leave It in the Ring is, and I like to put this out there, if you're a judge, small or big, doesn't even matter. I've approached judges and asked them, okay, do you think that I can have a chance of speaking to you? And I've had a few of them go, officials tell me, we're not allowed to do interviews. And, like, literally look over their shoulders like, you know, the CIA's watching them or something like that. But if you listen to this show, I'd love to speak to you, not to put you on a crucifix, not to question your integrity or anything like that, but to really learn, to find out how difficult, and I'm pretty sure it is pretty difficult. I wouldn't want to be a judge. But to just to go through the footsteps and what you have to do and what you've learned and how you're supposed to learn your craft so that you can be a better judge, I'd like to sit through with you and figure that out, you know, and hear your version, because we're so quick to point out the wrongs that that a judge does and the fails that they do. But there's some good judges out there that do excellent work. They're able to look at a fight and call the fight correctly, whether we agree with it or not. But if you go back and you look at it and you go like, oh man, you know what, he was right, he did score the fight the way it was supposed to be scored. I'd like to sit with a judge and talk to him and stuff. Fight fans, you want to call in 357-275-7598, certainly can, you know. And go really back really quick when I was talking, like, I've had officials, and you've been there, Gabriel, we were asking an official, and they're like, they open up, and then when a light switch, they're like, oh, you guys are not going to talk about this, right? And it's like, well, yeah, this is the whole purpose of us speaking to you, you know? And, you know, I've had that a lot happen, where we're speaking to somebody, and they're like, oh, no, you don't even know me, don't even mention my name. So afraid of what's going to happen to the career, you know. I even thinking about Memo Heredia, and you know, I won't say the person's name, but this certain person that I know knows him. And I told you, remember, Gabriel, I texted you, and I said, you know, the guy literally asked me, is this going to be the good journalist or the bad journalist? And I'm thinking to myself, when have we ever been bad journalists? When have we ever just outed somebody out just to out them out because we didn't like this person? Anything that we ever talk about has substance to it. There's a reason behind it. You know, thinking about the whole testing and about, you know, Dr. Kanye, we had him on, I think it was like almost 3 years ago. This was during the investigation that they were still prolonging with Mosley, and we got him on. You know, and there was something there.
It was around the time when he released all those videos. Yeah,
exactly.
I want to say it was May, June, somewhere in there of 2010.
Yeah, and nobody was talking about it. Nobody was, you know, really kind of, you know, figuring out. The same thing with the World of Series of Boxing. You know, we praised it, and then when the funkiness happened, we went after it. We wanted to find out a little
Alfredo
bit more.
Alfredo Angulo as well.
Exactly. You know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, that we have covered. Now, is it all glory? Of course not, you know, but my response to that person about the bad, is it a good, are you guys going to be the good journalist or the bad journalist? My response to him was that we just want to cover the truth. It's not about you liking us, and it's not about being, you know, every goody-goody with, you know, all the listeners and the fighters and high-fiving them. It's about caring for the sport and caring enough to pull the wool off certain things so that we could see it and visually be able to point it out and say, this is why We're in the sport, and this is why we care, and this is the reason why we can care less if you give us credentials or if you speak to us. Because eventually you're going to have to talk to us.
I've been banned twice this year, and I got my credentials back. So, and I didn't have to do anything, folks, to get them back.
So he says, we'll get into that, too. We're going to investigate that there, too, listeners.
Yeah, the first one I did, I mean, the first one I went in like a man, all by my lonesome, and went inside the Golden Boy offices, sat down with the CEO, defended my case, and got my credentials back.
Right.
Second time, things I was writing about turned out to be true, and so I got my credentials back. All those guys that are going to talk about us pandering or any of that kind of stuff, I'm talking when I say us, me and Steve or you, either on Leave It in the Ring or Max Boxing, that's just flat out ridiculous. And my response when you said, you know, the good journalist or the bad journalist is just the journalist.
Exactly.
That's our job. Is you know, like it was New Year's Eve, and you know I don't really celebrate Christmas or, you know, I'm not a holiday guy. And I asked Memo Heredia on Twitter about this lawsuit that he filed because, honestly, I've written so many articles on PEDs, I forget them. And there was one that I found that was he had filed – it was quoted by Boxing Scene saying he had filed a lawsuit against Victor Conte. That was November 2011. And here he was in 2012 saying the same thing. And I was – you know, I found it. And I was like, hey, man, what happened to this? What happened to the lawsuit? Somebody yelled at me, this woman. You know, give it a rest. It's Christmas Eve.
I saw that.
and I was like, well, you know, when I found out that Santa didn't exist is the day that the truth stopped resting on Christmas Eve and Christmas. So, sorry. You know, if you don't like it, I blocked her to make her unfollow me, and then I unblocked her so she can feel free to interact with me, but she doesn't have to deal with the problem of following me anymore. But the whole point is just, you know, you're right. It's not about being liked. It's not about anything. I'm not up for, you know, BWAA awards or Barney's, like the writing awards, you know, and I'm not going to be, you know, I'm not a member of the BWAA. So whoever's in the running for Boxing Writer of the Year, I'm not up for that distinction this year. And, you know, I probably should be in that category.
And kudos for you.
Yeah, and screw it, you know. I think actually Steve Kim, if I had a vote, he would get my vote every year because he's so consistent and so very good at his job. I just had a lucky year.
Bad Left Hook. I think that guy's a great candidate, man. I love his stuff, you know. The guy really puts in the work.
I would put him in a different category.
Right.
To me, he's the best of what blogging should be.
Yeah, I agree.
He condenses news beautifully and puts it out there. Everybody's got their thing, but you know the point is, it's kind of a long rant. It's just I'm just here to do the job. Like you said, I care about the sport. I want to leave it better than I found it, and that's kind of the whole point. I think every one of us media should look to do that because this kind of needs our care. It needs our love. You know, just sit there and just say, that's boxing. Then you're just coming in and you're eating off the trough and you're not offering anything.
Absolutely.
You know?
We got to patch in our first fight, guest here on Leaving the Ring. Fight fans, you want to call in, you certainly can. 347-215-7598 here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Let's give Steve Cunningham a call here and see what he's got to say about and what his thoughts are about that fight with Thomas Adamick. And if he thinks there's going to be a third time around. If you would want a third time around with on Adamick or Adamick. So many people call him, you know, his last name so many different ways and stuff.
No idea.
I know. I did speak to his wife earlier so that he would be ready for us here on Leaving the Ring. So hopefully answers what happens on a live show.
Hi, you've reached Steve Cunningham. Please leave a message.
Let me let him know. Yeah, let me give him a ring one more time. So I'll text his wife and let him know, hey, we're giving him a ring. Ring a ding, ding, ding. Santa Cruz. I had a lot of people hitting me up about Santa Cruz. Leo Santa Cruz, not looking too hot, looking too great. I said, man, you know what? Fight how many times that guy fought within this year alone and tell me if you're going to look sharp as ever, you know, at that last fight. It was not even 30 days, I don't believe, that he had rest time. You know, the guy went in there and he still tried to perform and give us a good fight and a good outing. I think you should applaud him for that. How many fighters have the guts to get up and go, you know what? Oh, 25 days? No problem. I'll get back into the ring.
Yeah, you know, I think
hi,
it's time.
Steve.
Hi. I think his time at 118 is done, man. His body just he looked sapped. He did look like a guy that needed a rest. But, you know, five times in 1 year, what do people want? Every performance. And here's the thing about Leo Santa Cruz. Great kid, great personality, good representative of the sport. Looks like a little person version of Margarito. He doesn't really have a lot of power. He's a volume guy. He places his shots very well. He goes to the body very well. And he's very, very consistent. But there's not a jab there. He goes very flat. You know, he's kind of square. And then he does that shell defense like Margarito did. He makes himself very flat. So he's kind of easy to hit. He's a very wide target. He doesn't turn sideways enough. And on top of that, I just think because of that, that technique makes it so his power. He doesn't get the most snap and the most pop out of his technique. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see him move to 122, and where he's not going to have the complete physical advantages that he does at 118. See what kind of fighter he becomes.
Right.
He's got everything, but he doesn't have power.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. Even I think, if I remember correctly, we're sitting there, even one of the Showtime's executives mentioned it as well. He's like, man, how this guy's making it, you know. I forgot exactly the weight that he had during weigh-in, weigh-in, you know. I think it was the day before. I think he had to lose maybe like 10 pounds. I'm not really sure. Don't quote me on that.
It was a lot. It was. Steve was talking about it in the gym that he was he was wearing like three or four layers. It was like a week out from the fight. You know, look at him. He's ridiculously muscled. Not an ounce of fat on him.
No.
Where is he losing weight? You know, you're losing something there. I think they should move on up. Pretty exciting kid. I somebody with a good jab and athleticism is going to be a problem for
him. Give Steve a try really quick and stuff. Let him know we are calling from a private number. A lot of times what happens with the fighters is I call them on my cell phone first, and then when I call them back on the leaving an account, they don't answer it because they're waiting for my cell phone number to come up.
Hi, you've reached Steve Cunningham.
Okay, well, I will let her know again. Anyways, fight fans, you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Let's get back with Leo Santa Cruz. You know, that size, the wear and tear, especially for a fighter, the way he fights, that's a lot of wear and tear for your body. I don't care if you're young or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's a light fight, even if it's not that much action, you still, there's the activity alone of fighting 28 days, and thanks, Lannis, he put that out there. It was 28 days later, and he was in a pretty good war before that, you know, and even before that, and then before that, your body's got to rest. You know, there's got to be a time where your body's going to say, your mind may be fresh and ready to go, but your body's going to go, hey, listen, man, you know, you're basically just dragging me through the mud. I got to get some breathing time, some healing time, mostly the healing time I got to get.
That's the thing. Every time I see him after a fight, he's pretty beat up. Even if he clearly won and dominated the other guy, he still takes shots. And he still bruises up quite a bit and swells up quite a bit. And I can't help but wonder if that is a byproduct of losing that weight, but also just the nature of his style. There's not a long shelf life here like we were talking about earlier. When he hits 30, it's all going to catch up to him, you know. Maybe even before that, we'll see, you know, because he fights so often, even as a champ. And you notice with Golden Boy, I mean, they've got a good stable, but they roll them out pretty often. They keep their guys fighting fairly often. I'm very curious to see. It's just two very distinct philosophies. You know, Top Rank builds slowly with their guys. They really don't care what you think. They don't make fights based on the fans will like this fight. They say that, but that they don't. That's just part of the promotion. Whereas Golden Boy, I think, is a little bit influenced by the fans, and they kind of want to put out a fight that you definitely want to see, that you wouldn't think of would ever get made because it's so good. I'm curious to see if it's more of a UFC model. And you notice how Dana and Oscar are very pally
right
on Twitter. I have to think that they've all discussed branding and what UFC is doing. I mean, you look at the way UFC handles media and just their whole sport, and then you look at Golden Boy and the way they handle media and the way they handle their business, they're very, very, very similar. The UFC has their own – they have a couple websites. If you look at the bottom, they're actually owned by the UFC. And then you have The Ring, which is owned by Golden Boy. And it's very
right.
I mean, I'm not saying anything about Doug. I think he's a great guy. He's one of my mentors, one of the true great writers of the sport. I'm not saying anything specifically about people, but you can kind of see it. It's slanted towards Golden Boy. It really is, from the ratings to the articles. It just is.
We can get into those ratings in a short bit, you know. Time to Steve Cunningham here and see if we can get him on. They, like I said, they were aware that we had the interview with them at 6 Pacific and 9 Eastern. Okay, so SBR did text them right now to answer the phone.
Ratings is a thing that I just don't. I don't know if you can fix it.
I don't either.
It's just too. I still remember we had Jose Suleiman on, and I was like, just explain to me how that.
Hi, Steve Cunningham. Please leave a message.
Okay. Let me go ahead and say what you got to say. I got to text her back. She's texting me right now saying sorry for the confusion. Let me let her know that he's not answering.
Okay. We've had Jose Suleiman on, and he's kind of passing the buck on the rankings. I understand there's this kind of new fantasy rankings group that's out. I just don't see how, if you look at the sport and go, okay, I need to zero in on a problem that is the epicenter of all the other problems, the ratings might not be it. In fact, I definitely don't think it's it. I mean, you could start with the commissions. You could start with the lack of uniformity in the rules. I mean, I think even performance-enhancing drugs is a little bit cart before the horse. It's just so many other things that kind of come before it. The corruption of the sport, the lack of firewall between the judges and the promoters, old judges. Oh, there's so many problems. Ratings, I mean, it's a business, so it's not like another sport. You don't beat this guy to move up to this thing. I mean, sometimes you do, but it's usually like a TV fight that's a setup anyways. So to me, by saying I'm going to pick rankings, it's almost like putting on a T-shirt that says I don't understand how this business works, even though I work as a reporter covering it. You know, that's how I look at it.
Definitely.
I could be wrong.
I
challenge somebody to come on and tell me how wrong I am.
You know, I can't remember right away what one of the ratings I was looking at, and I was just kind of stunned, and I was like, wow, like really, man? But I want to talk about Nonito Dornier. And that was on the same night of Amir Khan and Carlos Molina. And really, I even tweeted out there, did you expect anything else or anything different with Jorge Arce? I know HBO was jumping up and down, like, oh, this is the Nonito we were waiting for, looking for. And I'm like, well, yeah, of course. You know, he had a guy that was going to come forward and a guy that was really past his prime. I don't care what Memo was doing for him and stuff, you know. With going with Marquez, because I had a pretty interesting conversation with somebody on Facebook about it, and they were saying, they were like, well, why do you think there was a huge difference with Marquez, with Memo working with Marquez, and with Arce? Why didn't you see the same results? And I said, because you can enhance somebody or you can do anything. I'm not accusing anybody of anything. I'm just saying you can, strength condition a guy, but you can't put skills in the person. You just can't embed that. You know, either you got it or you don't, or if you lose it, you lost it, you know?
Well, also, fight fans think because the first time they become aware of something, it's the first time it's happened.
Right.
We're not sure how long Heredia was working with Arce. I think it was as far back as the Vasquez fight. So, in fact, he actually did help him along. Remember, he had this kind of late run that came to an abrupt end.
Yep.
Yeah, you're right on point.
You know, and going back with Nonito is, okay, great. You got everything out of the way that you needed to do with Top Rank. And I like the fact that he said, I want Abner Morris, you know. And you know what? That's the fight that fight fans need to really honestly start pounding on both promoters' doors, because we might end up again with another Floyd Mayweather and Pacquiao, something we may not ever end up seeing. These are two great fighters. I don't want to wait until 2014, 15, or 16 to see these guys finally get in and mix it up. It's great that he's doing the VADA testing. I applaud him for all that. But now it's time to step it up and start facing the real oppositions that a lot of us have been waiting for some time. I know it's not entirely all his fault, but you cleaned it out. You did what the promoter wanted. Now it's your turn to give back what the fans have been waiting for, and that's some real fights.
Yeah, that's, good Lord. Sorry, the cold medicine, I think, just kicked in. I took a little DayQuil and feel a little antsy all of a sudden. I think because you know the theme of the show is obviously we're looking back at the last year and looking forward, and I think looking at the problems and looking at the performance enhancing drugs, I think you ended up. We just need good fights. We need better fights. I think all the fights that we're starting to look at for next year, they look great. I think the fights that we had happened this year, the progressions that needed to happen, happened. Broner, I think, is moving along really nicely. Leo Santa Cruz moving along very nicely. But the one thread that I think it does need to be picked up is this PED thing with the testing. I don't want to see it because we saw a big wave and then we saw another big wave of it. I'd like us to kind of carry it through. I think that second wave kind of showed us that we can't drop the thread, that we need to kind of keep moving forward with it, that it's not something that you can just be excited about like everybody was about scoring after Bradley Pacquiao, and then they just kind of put it away. And then Cunningham happened, like, oh, my God, scoring. And then, like, notice there's, nobody's really talking about it, unless we're talking about it on the show. But with the Heredia thing, yeah, that was an interesting point. People kept saying that, oh, we'll see. Nobody, I remember Mike Coppinger was all out there going, well, nobody's saying anything now that Arce lost. And it's like, well, yeah, but when was he working with him? When was Memo working with him? You know, I think that's a really good question. When did that run start? Because he came back late against a young buck in Vasquez who nobody gave him a shot of beating, much less stopping. So I think, styles make fights. That is an immutable truth of boxing. That's
right.
The way it is. You can have whatever in your system. It doesn't matter. If the other, you notice what's interesting. People will talk about, Memo was even bringing it up on Twitter, the Montiel fight with Donaire and then this fight. But look at the height of both of those guys, Montiel and Arce. Look at the punch that knocked them out. They're just right there for it with Donaire.
Right.
He's tall. When he throws that left hook, their head's right there. It's perfect. So, of course, they got knocked out by it. It just makes sense. Styles make fights. Physical matchups make fights and make for great knockouts. It was what it was. I don't think anybody picked Arce to really do much of anything. I had some trepidation going in just because I knew Donaire's hand wasn't 100%, and I wasn't crazy about the camp. Let me jump to something that's really, speaking of unpopular comments, I don't know who your trainer of the year is. I haven't really. I don't particularly do awards. But everybody out there, all your boxing writers, you guys need to learn how to cover the beat. Just flat out. And not all of them, because there are some that actually know this. But Robert Garcia doesn't actually train Nonito Donaire. He works the corner. So if you're going to make Robert Garcia trainer of the year, you've got to base it on all of his other fighters,
right?
Can't base it on Donaire because he doesn't train him. He didn't even come up to camp, this whole camp for this last fight. They didn't come up to camp once. He was in the corner. So you gotta cover the beat. You gotta know what you're covering. You know, I mean, it's really hard for me to talk to and respect other boxing writers when they don't know that basic fact. And they're going to give out awards based on his body of work, and they don't even understand it. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing that people don't know that. I think it's a little disingenuous of Robert to kind of take the work and say, not to take the work, but to take the credit. It's like, well, wait a minute. You weren't in camp. I'm not calling him a bad guy. This is Nonito and him's deal. It's what they prefer. It's how Nonito likes to work. But is he the corner man of the year or is he the trainer of the year?
Yeah, there's a big, huge difference there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Big, big, huge difference there. Yeah, I don't know. Going off this whole train of the year, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe some fight fans can call in and tell me if I'm wrong about this, but I really didn't see a whole big train of the year type of deal or even like fighter of the year. This one was a pretty tough year for me to really put my head into it and say, well, this guy is for sure, he's a for sure win. You know, I don't know. This was a tough year. I think a lot of people had an excellent year for themselves. You know, Sergio Martinez had some great wins, but his big significant win was against Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. But then again, you look at it and you go, well, not a lot of folks were really honestly leaning towards Julio to win. They thought he was going to give him a tough fight. I thought he was going to give him a tough fight, but I wasn't really leaning that he was going to get that spectacular, you know, Julio was going to have a almost definite or equal opportunity of stopping Sergio Martinez. Even with trainer of the year. I mean, a lot of these guys, they lost some. They didn't do fairly well, or their fighter just didn't fight as often for you to sit there and go like, yeah, he's trainer of the year. This was a tough run for me.
I know who isn't trainer of the year.
I know.
Man.
Yeah, you know.
That's one of the worst. I mean, but that's
the way things go, man. You know, you're
that's
up.
Boxing.
And then you're down and stuff. We're talking about Freddie Roach here, if anybody's wondering and stuff. You know, he had a tough year for himself and for a lot of his fighters, you know. And, you know, some fight fans upset because their fighters have decided to take a change of course and leave and try to seek out for another trainer. But, hey, you know what? When you're trying to keep your career, above surface, you got to do what's right for you. It's a business. This is nothing personal. I don't think they have anything bad to say about Freddie, but I think they've learned whatever they could from Freddie Roach and stuff. And when you're a fight fan, and a lot of fight fans do this, we point out the obvious of what a trainer knows how to do and what they don't know how to do. That's just part of the sport, you know. We're all experts in certain ways and certain fields and of what we decide to talk about and stuff, you know. We get some guys, man, they can just, you know, talk about fights from 1940 and you got me stumped. I'll be like, I don't even know what you're talking about, brother. You know?
Yeah, but, seriously.
But, you know, I think Freddie will be back on his feet. Whether or not he has another world champion, I say he does because there are still fighters out there that already have a title that'd be willing to work with them to, you know, just to get that opportunity to work with a legend.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'm kind of looking at the Twitter. I'm breaking our rule. Andre Ward's put out a statement about his shoulder injury and everything.
You know what, I'm glad that you brought that up because I got to say something. I got to get this off my chest that I saw. I'm a big Andre Ward fan, but when you're calling out Carl Froch and you're making basically fun of that, he's going to go after Mikhail Kessler when you were basically going after Kelly Pavlik. Shame on you. Really, shame on you. That's just ridiculous. You know, how are you gonna bag on another man's chance of trying to fight a guy that it was a tough fight for him because he ain't gonna go after you or that. You know, when you could have made the same distinction of saying I'm not gonna fight Kelly Pavlik. Now the whole shoulder injury. I don't know. I was just kind of bit turned off with that. I was like, really, man? Like you're gonna call out Carl Froch when you're facing Kelly Pavlik? You want to face Kelly Pavlik? Isn't this the same thing?
Yeah, I thought so. I thought it was kind of. I don't know. Andre's taking a real strange turn.
Sport, in my opinion. I mean, what's going on with you, dude? You know, it's kind of out of left field. I've seen him a little bit on Twitter. I don't know if he's getting finger happy or what. I almost like the humble Andre Ward. Like, stay off of Twitter. Do your talking in the ring. You know, there's no need to call out people and stuff. You know, let these guys – trust me, the money's still there for you. If it's supposed to be – the fight's supposed to be made, it's going to be made.
I think, you know – I don't care what they say. They should have gone to Canada and knocked Bute out. They should have got there first.
Right.
Instead, the guy that Ward beat handily with one hand went and did what he was going to do. Kind of took away his, you know, at least that's how it looked on the outside, is what Ken Hirschman when he was with Showtime, was moving towards. They kind of locked up Bute. They had the super sticks going. It was all moving perfectly towards a mega fight between the one guy not in the Super Six and the winner, which was going to be Andre Ward. That hasn't happened. It is interesting to me. I did an interview that I never printed. Where it seemed like the Ward, you know, at least Virgil Hunter, it was like there's reasons why we didn't fight the guy, and now, you know, we see that he wasn't as real as we thought, Bute. But again, styles make fights. Athletic southpaw guy might have given you more trouble than it gave Carl Froch. Who knows? I still think the weight's kind of killing Bute. But, yeah, it's very strange. I don't want to kind of get too far into it because I don't really – I haven't talked to Dre in a while. But I do find the shift kind of interesting. It's almost like he's kind of become bitter after winning the Super Six as opposed to what I thought would happen. It's It's weird. It's a strange character shift. And I thought it was, yeah, well, you're fighting Kelly Pavlik after he just moved, you know, Chad Dawson moved down to 168 and looked like a shell of himself. You're not exactly on a, like, you know, about to take Floyd's spot. I mean, maybe by default when he retires, but those aren't, that's not really murderer's row, you know? At least looking at it in hindsight. I mean, it's just kind of odd, I guess.
Right. No,
the whole
behavior
is kind of odd. Yeah, it's very out of character, very strange. Or maybe that's the character all along. Who knows? Andre is an enigma. I would never, you know, I know him, but I don't say I know him. You
right.
know what I mean?
No, I agree and stuff, you know. And, you know, really quick, too, we're still, you know, I'm waiting for the PR to let us know when Steve's ready for us here on Leaving the Ring. Too, we're going to have a young guy, a young man named Andre Diaz, who's an inspiring documentary film producer, and he's doing these documentaries about boxing called The Pursuit. And what he basically does is he follows an up-and-comer, and you get to witness their first couple of fights on the documentary, what they're doing for preparation in the locker room, and you get to see the fight live while it goes and stuff. I had a chance to check it out. It's on YouTube. It's called The Pursuit. And it was really good. And, you know what? And I love stuff like that. I love people that decide to do something that's different, you know, that try to just think out of the box. You know, I know that documentaries of boxing is not thinking out of the box, but this was something that I don't think he's making any money off. It's just the pure love of the sport. And that's exactly what he decided to do. You know, we do a lot of stuff. We have tried to push the envelope. We've done our, you know, which we're still going to continue to do, our live streams at boxing gyms and interviewing fighters. We always try to reinvent ourselves. We've done tons of things, you know, and I'm happy to see that there's people out there that kind of jump on it and they try it out themselves and stuff, you know, because that's basically what we try to do is wake up other folks and say, hey, give it a shot. You know, this is the way to promote fights and stuff, you know?
Yeah. It's nice to see other people, doing Ustream shows. What time is Steve calling in?
Let me give him a shot one more time and see if he answers the phone here. And
as you can tell, I've got a little bit of a cold, and it's kind of, I'm a little goofy on the show tonight. But Dave, you're carrying it well. I just, well, out of it. I've been fighting this cold, and I've been kind of trying to be aggressive.
Yeah,
I got big plans for New Year's Eve. I don't know about anybody else. That is one holiday I do get down on.
Me too.
That and my birthday. Those are the only two.
I plan on waking up somewhere I haven't been. I get here, you know.
It's been a while since that. Yeah, that's why I'm going to a different city. I'm going to get crazy.
Absolutely.
And the cops won't recognize me or anything, so it'll be nice.
Hi, it's Steve Cunningham. Please be.
Okay, you're not ready for us.
Ridiculous.
I know. 347-215-7598 here on Leaving the Ring. Call in. Let's talk some boxing here. Hey, let's patch in a fight fan who wants to talk boxing. Avery wants to talk about Canelo. What's up, brother? Live right now.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing good, man. Doing good. Happy holidays.
Wow. Happy holidays to you, too. I was wondering, do you guys think that Golden Boy will ever put Canelo against a decent 154-pounder before getting him in there with Floyd Mayweather? Because I like Canelo, but I want to see him go in there and kind of prove himself against somebody first.
Yeah,
I
would think, right?
I don't think it's really Golden Boy, man. To tell you the truth, I mean, if we kind of watch the pattern of Golden Boy, they've actually put their cards in tough where they end up ruining them, the guy or an upcoming star. They've done that. That was a huge pattern. I think Canelo really has a hold of his own career, and he's really able because of the fact that he brings a large amount of viewers and people that want to tune in to watch him, that he has that leverage to say, no, I'm not going to do this. No, I'm not going to do that. Even with conversations with him, you could basically hear that, you know, his camp has a lot of the so-say of what he's going to do next. And rightfully so, if you're able to bring the star power to it, you should have the right to do that. At the same time, it just doesn't pan out for us real hardcore boxing fans that want to see real fights.
Yeah, you would think that they would want to give him the test, but he is a co-promoter. You know, he is his own promoter. He's got to deal with Golden Boy. I've heard a few theories on it, you know, why they want to move towards this fight. I mean, he wants the fight. He thinks he's ready for Floyd. I think he thinks he's bigger than Floyd, which he is. And the way he fights, very patient. I think he's going to be a bit of a problem. But like one theory I've heard is that he's not happy with his contract with Golden Boy and that, or that he's, with his deal, and he wants to move on towards more of the super fights, like with the Chavez or whatever, and that. That's kind of one of the reasons why they're pushing towards the Floyd fight, is to kind of get that money and then be with it. That's one theory I've heard. I don't know how true it is, but I've heard that from a couple of people. I don't know. I think he just thinks he's on that level. And since I first met him when he first came to the States, talking with his trainer, not the younger one, but the older one, he really seems to they've been trying to build a unique fighter this whole time. They have a very distinct plan. You know, they like that he's a counterpuncher. He's natural. They've stayed true to his nature rather than make him into something. I really like what they've done with him. I think he's a much better fighter than people give him credit for. But he also, he didn't have an amateur career, you know? And so they're building that, I think. That's why it's taking so long. And fight fans these days are so impatient. I'm impatient at this point, but he's got the belt. That's my problem, is don't get a belt if you're not ready. But
that's what I'm saying.
That's also the way it works anymore. You know, the networks want belts. So if they're going to build this star, they wouldn't want to build him as just a guy. They want to build him as a champion, you know, so that when he does start fighting the great fights, like, it's all there. It's all done already, you know. That's just, it is. Fight fans waste a lot of time fighting against reality, you know. In reality, this is a business. But it's interesting. I'm with you. I want to see him with like everybody.
Exactly. I just want to see him in with somebody that's a really true 154 pounder and see if he really belongs in that division. Because I don't think he does. To tell you the truth.
Yeah, I want to see him test himself against Trout. I mean, that's the fight that I'm begging to happen.
I'd love to see that fight. I just don't see it happening. I don't think they're gonna chance it. If they do.
Is it
a fight? It's a really good fight.
Two guys that it gets a market. Here's something that really you really want to get to. It's not a problem, but it's an issue that could be bolstered. The African American community, the fan base in boxing, that is an untapped market that needs to be developed. You know, Broner might be the only guy that has, and Andre Ward in Oakland. But Broner and Cincinnati, those might be the two guys that actually are draws, besides Floyd, but he's kind of like a superstar draw. He doesn't always sell out, but his people do travel for him now. That's kind of, you know, that's something that needs to be tapped into. Austin Trout had a huge win. Tim Bradley, as much as we argue about the outcome of the fight, had a huge win.
Right.
Where are their big fights, and where are the people clamoring to see them next? At least the Trout win was actually a good fight. It was a good win. And, you know, where is the love? That is a market that no one's really tapping into.
But you think that's the fans? I mean, because I am an African-American fan, and I'm wondering, where's all the support for, like, Austin Trout and, you know, and Andre Ward? I don't really see it like I used to. You know what I mean? Like, back in the day, you know, we supported, you know, like Colonel Whitaker, we supported, you know, Mike Tyson, Rick Bowe. We supported our fathers. It seemed like that market of African American hardcore fans isn't there like it used to be.
Well, you know, Don King used to be the guy, right? You know, he used to be represent the black fighters for the black man. He was also a hell of a promoter just in general. And we're kind of missing that guy. Al Haymon has signed all the black fighters. You notice his stable. I mean, he's got some non African American fighters, but by and large, they are. But he doesn't seem to put them – like Fernando Guerrero, he draws very well back home. But he doesn't fight them anymore. He fights in Mexico. He fights here. He fights there. There was a guy that could have been, I think, very good boxing skills, great personality, great smile, nice guy, could have been developed. And they took him out of the market he was thriving in. That doesn't make a lot of sense. And it's almost like Al is trying to be Don King, but like undercover Don King.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
As a promoter, I think in 2013, there's something else that should happen. Al Haymon, just come out as a promoter. Stop trying to be an advisor behind the scenes and just be a promoter. Lying.
Yeah, I do.
Is he a promoter or is he a manager?
Right.
You know?
Right.
He's certainly not a guy that plans a very good ring entrance. I'll give him that, you know? That was a little shaky. But line, I think, there's a piece. Somebody, I was talking with Steve about it. One of us is probably going to end up writing it. We need to revisit the Muhammad Ali Act and see, now that it's past 10 years since it came out, what are we doing about that? You know, what parts are we ignoring? What parts do we need to implement more? I think that's something interesting. That and like the African American community is as a fan base that needs to just absolutely be developed. It's not like there's no black people, you know? I mean, come on.
Yeah. No good black fighters. There's some good black fighters out there. It's just a matter of you need to find a way to tap into that fan base.
Yeah, it's mysterious. I know Steve Kim wrote about it a while back. Not this year, but last year. I think he wrote an article about it. And it is interesting. I think it's something that you can't build a market overnight, but you certainly can rebuild it over time. And I hope
right.
that somebody, because that would really do a lot for boxing. It would be huge for boxing.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it would.
So, you know, I don't know. It's interesting. I'm kind of just heading into the new year. I'm not doing lists this year or anything, but I'm kind of looking at the things that I think should be important next year. That
Absolutely.
Should.
Yeah.
We have momentum. I think people are like, the PED thing, what it did, I'm trying not to bring it up too much because even I get a little fatigued with it, is I think it's shown people that if you do pay attention to something long enough, you can bring it to light, you can understand it, and you can, through that, find better solutions. If we pick a few things in the sport that we do that with, over a period of time, it took 3 years, or really 2 years, to get set up for all these positive tests, all the craziness of this year. We've got to start now on certain things in the sport. Judging would be a big one.
Yeah.
I think that's a big one.
Right.
Because I think when it's a thread you pull and all this other shit comes off, you know, bad judging, follow the money. It's going to lead to a lot of things. If somebody gets into the judging. I really believe that.
Yep, exactly.
All right, Dave, you got to start talking. So.
I know. All right, brother, I'm going to put you back on hold. I appreciate the call, man.
Call, man.
I appreciate it.
You know, and you know, this past 2 weeks of us not being on the air, we got a lot of email, man. I really appreciate everybody that was hitting us up and asking us where we're at and you know, how come we're not on the airwaves. What I'm going to do is I'm going to put up the best of Leave the Ring for this year. I mean, we got a lot of stuff accomplished and done here on Leave the Ring. There's a lot of jewels that we were able to have a chance to do interview-wise, and I'm going to put it all in one segment and then throw it out there, and that'd be basically our present back to the listeners that have been loyal and supportive to us here on Leave the Ring. So go get your tea there, Gabriel. He's sick. He's got a cough and stuff. You know, that flu just doesn't want to shake. I see a lot of guys are still sick, you know, and not able to rise and get up off the bed. But, you know, going back to that, what I was talking about, you know, from Jose Suleiman, from Danny Jacobs, when he hadn't done an interview with anybody and really wasn't able to tell a story. He came on Leaving the Ring. From, Victor Conte, you know, coming on as always. From, you know, Alfredo Angulo when he had just got released from James Kirtland defeating Angulo. Tons of stuff on Leave the Ring. We're going to all put it in one whole full segment so everybody can be reminded and refreshed. I mean, we're going on pretty strong for 4 years, man, and I really, really appreciate. I think that's the greatest gift that I've gotten for Christmas is the fans and the listeners that have just really fully have supported Leaving the Ring, even with our Ustream and, you know, our documentary that we were doing, our reality series, which was The Hurt Business. So we appreciate that. 347-215-7598. That's again 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. If Canelo was to fight and accept the fight with Austin Trout, would that shut you guys up? You know what? It would probably shut me up for the time being. Win or lose, it would probably shut me up for the time being. But look, here's the fact here, you know, and I know that Mexican Pride or, you know, Black Pride and, you know, Filipino Pride and all the other prides that are out there in the world, it's a stinger. You know, when we're talking about a particular fighter, it's nothing personal. It's just that as a fight fan, there's no color in our eyes. If you're a hardcore fight fan, you get a lot of hardcore fight fans that call in and stay on the air with us for 3 hours. That's a fight fan there. You know, that's a guy that cares about the whole realm of the sport, not just about one particular fighter that they can identify with. As fight fans, we identify with all the fighters of the world. So if Canelo was to accept the fight with Austin Trout, would it shut us up? Absolutely, for that time being.
Because absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's what we want. You know, we want to see him in with the contemporaries. I think in 2013 we will. The problem with Canelo is that he's become, you know, he was a guy with no amateur career, and they would fight him fairly often. But he's starting to slow down in the amount of times he wants to fight a year. He's kind of gotten to that, all right, now I can be a two-time-a-year fighter. He's going to stop developing, and two, you know, that's just not enough to continue to build his fan base. You know, I think they're overstating things by, at his young age, slowing him down as opposed and turning him into a pay-per-view guy where not everybody can see him. Because once guys go pay-per-view, man, it's hard to get him to come back. So it's going to be interesting to see how they market him. Does his demands meet all the things that he needs? You know, I mean, it's one thing to become that superstar guy, but, you know, Floyd fought a hell of a lot of the times before, and with a long amateur career, he was brilliant by the time he went pay-per-view. Canelo's not there yet. He hasn't even proven that he can beat somebody with a chance to beat him. You know, so it is, I mean, Canelo was like, I'm always impressed with him, but at the same time, you know, I look at the opposition. I haven't seen him really be opposed yet. So 2013 is going to be fun for him, hopefully.
You know, really quick, you know, we do answer questions, or if you have a topic on Twitter or on Facebook, you certainly can hit us up there. You know, Distance Seeker wants to know, what's happening with Omar Henry's condition? Tell you the truth, brother, I don't really know. I can't tell you that I've been following it. Wish him all the best. I know he had some gallstones, I believe. That's what he had tweeted out before.
No, he's got cancer, apparently, pancreatic cancer.
Oh.
I'm not sure what stage. Somebody was telling me about it yesterday. I haven't looked into it. You know, like we've been off the air a couple weeks,
right.
And I don't know if you've noticed, I've been writing a little bit sporadically. I've just holidays is holidays, man. I mean, it's, you know, whether you're a newsman or you're something else, and I'm trying to actually unplug as much as possible. So forgive me for not knowing the latest on Omar Henry, and you know my prayers, and you know I don't pray, but my thoughts are out to the guy.
Big time and stuff. And I've been on Vicodin like crazy, so I haven't been keeping up with what's going out there.
You know, you're all drugged out.
I know.
Making late night calls. But it's freaking me out. But, you know, and it's nothing, you know, it's not that, and I honestly just don't keep up on Omar Henry. And not
right.
Just our famous dust up years ago now. You know, but yeah, I mean, I hope a speedy recovery. I just had a friend that went through that, not pancreatic, but a different kind of cancer. It's brutal, man. It's devastating to people. So
it sucks. You know, hate to hear about that, man. It really sucks that happened to him. You know, same thing here. I hope he has a speedy recovery. We had a great conversation. Had a chance to talk to Danny Garcia's dad face to face, and me and Gabriel were able to ask him
questions
and stuff. And some of the questions really sparked up a little bit of fire of what I was tweeting out there on the way back home. You know, from leaving the hotel, and he said something that I really, really liked, and it really kind of falls into the whole Robert Guerrero discussion. I know I should have brought this up when we were talking about Guerrero, so we're kind of just falling back to that conversation. But, you know, he was talking about Marquez. We asked him about the knockout, and he threw something that was – I thought that was really interesting what he said, because there's some truth behind it. He said when Manny Pacquiao was interviewed on 24/7 and asked about, you know, this – fourth upcoming fight with Marquez, he said before he answered it, you would hear Freddie Roach just repeatedly say, we're going to knock him out. We're going to knock out Marquez. We're going to knock him out. And when it was asked to Manny Pacquiao, he replied just referencing his trainer, you know, like, you know, just repeating what he was saying, because that's what has been chirping in his ear. He said, oh, we're going to knock out Marquez. He said, you didn't feel it. But when Marquez was asked about the fourth fight, he said immediately, you could feel it, and it came from the heart. I'm going to knock him out. I'm going to knock him out. And I wanted to bring it up with the Marquez and Guerrero, and the reason why I think this is such a good competitive fight and why it could be a dangerous fight for Mayweather is because when you ask – and I'm talking about couple years back, guys. Okay, I can even throw it up on Twitter, for you could see it on YouTube. When I used to interview Robert, and I would talk to him just about fighting, basically, he used to literally made his way into getting the point out there that he could beat Pacquiao and he could beat Floyd Mayweather. And what I'm talking about, he was at 126. And having conversations with him now, you could just really see that he really strongly believes that, you know, like he really wants that opportunity. And that's something that I think a lot of fight fans got to look at and realize that when a guy's that hungry, he just makes him that dangerous. Where Floyd, I'm not sure Floyd is hungry anymore. Because, you know, when you're on top and you can just pick and feed off whatever that comes your way, you tend to get bored. You need that flame. Where Guerrero has to struggle for the recognition and the respect of fighters.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I that's one of the things I like about that fight and about Robert. It was interesting, like, you and I were talking about this Floyd and Manny thing and how it's kind of done. As soon as Manny hit the canvas, that fight was dead. And it was officially – I mean, it already had kind of jumped the shark with all the negotiations. But as soon as Manny Pacquiao got knocked the hell out with one punch, Manny and Mayweather just – it was over. And it's kind of interesting watching the storyline of – you got Marquez and Pacquiao kind of happening. And then you've got Floyd and Manny. That's the super fight. And they always kind of brush aside Marquez. Like, as soon as I get over done with this fight, we're going to get to this fight. And they've done that twice to Marquez. He's like slowly, like, just, you know, narrowing the gap, getting closer with Manny, getting closer. Gets a clear, probably the clearest win besides the knockout of all the fights in the third fight. And he still doesn't get the decision. And then he gets the knockout and he just ultimately kills it. It'd be interesting to see Robert Guerrero, who's also kind of on that same trajectory, under the radar. He's picking up belts. Never quite gets to take a belt from a champion.
Mm-hmm.
It's always got to be interim, so he's always kind of always left a little hungry, you know, always left a little bit less than everybody else. And it's that guy that you keep telling him, no, man, you don't belong in this club. You don't belong in this club. Eventually he's going to knock the door down and, like, kill everybody inside and take over the club. I'm very curious to see him in this Mayweather fight. He did exactly what we asked him to do. Show us. He did in two fights. I was very impressed. He did it in ways I did not imagine. I want to see him fight Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah, you know what? I'm just laughing because somebody's texting me right now. I'm like, oh man, you guys sound like Mauro Serrano tonight.
That's funny.
Let's match him some fight pants. 215-7598. You know, sadly, I think Mauro would sell it a lot better than us. You know, I don't think we can do it justice. For Mauro Serrano's in his position for a reason. The guy can sell. Anyways, 347-215-7598. Let's patch in some fight fans here. Dre, who wants to talk? Guerrero and Canelo here on Leave the Ring. What's up, brother? You're on live.
Hey, what's going on? How's everybody doing?
Good, man. How you doing, man?
Good, man.
I'm doing good, bro. I just wanted to comment on that. I mean, I think it's obvious that the Ghost is the front runner of the Mayweather fight on May 4th. But I hear a lot of people disagreeing with it. And, I mean, money-wise, Mayweather should take the Canelo fight.
Right.
But a lot of people are disagreeing with that, that Guerrero deserves a fight. I personally think that he earned his shot a long time ago. And he is the mandatory, I believe. And
he is mandatory. That's very true.
Like I said, at this point in his career, I forgot who said it, but somebody mentioned that Mayweather's at the top and he's not hungry anymore. But like now he's just money hungry. He feels that he doesn't have to prove anything. The smart fight for him in that case would be the Canelo, because Canelo's more of a household name. But like I said, somebody else mentioned that Guerrero was a hungry fighter, and when you're a hungry fighter, that makes him a dangerous opponent. So a lot of people are overlooking Guerrero, and I think that is very dangerous for Floyd Mayweather.
And I don't even think that, you know, Canelo does very good ratings. I mean, he's a household name, I guess, in Mexican households.
Right.
He's not quite a household name in non-Mexican households. But so in that sense, I mean, and Victor Ortiz, you know, people keep saying, well, you know, who's Robert Guerrero beat or blah, blah, blah. Victor Ortiz, he was not a household name. Still isn't a household name. You know, he didn't really – he was a good foil. He was good for the 24-7 and everything, but and he was a dangerous fight, no question. But he wasn't the most – I mean, he wasn't a guy with anything marketing-wise coming into the fight other than his win over Berto, who can't sell tickets in his hometown, you know. So and I don't even know – his ratings on HBO aren't exactly through the roof. So this fight with Guerrero, I think it just makes sense. He's earned it. He came up, he planted his flag and said, I'm going to be in this division. I'm not going to 140. I'm not going to, you know, do all listen to anybody else. I'm doing my thing. And he's pulled it off. He beat Aiden, and we're kind of like, oh, he's kind of a one-armed bandit. He was a little rusty. Let's see more, because I wasn't particularly impressed by that win. I was really impressed by the Berto win. I was very impressed. And am I convinced he can beat Floyd? No. Am I convinced he can compete? Yes. That's enough.
I completely agree with you. I completely agree. I have Mayweather winning the fight, but I wouldn't sleep on Guerrero, and I wouldn't be highly surprised if Guerrero pulls out the victory. And the reason I say this is because Not to take anything away from Floyd, but you know, Floyd is human and he is getting up there. And with these layoffs, it does concern me that, I mean, Floyd Mayweather is a gym rat. So regardless of anything, he's going to be in top shape. But like I said before, he is human. He's aging. And with these long layoffs, who knows? Anything could happen. Am I going to say it could happen? Like, is it going to happen on May 4th? Who knows? Maybe it won't, because a lot of people were saying that he was going to fall off against the quota with the layoff and Mosley, but who knows? I just want to ask you guys a question. Who do you think Canelo should fight on May 4th? Because that's what it looks like. Because Richard Schaefer announced that he wants to do a doubleheader, so that's pretty much obvious that Canelo's going to be on the undercard.
I think right now, like the Twitter people out there and the fans, you know, I think that Richard Schaefer should hear their voice, which is Austin Trout. You know, Canelo, if you're going to fight anybody, it should be Austin Trout. He beat Cotto, who the guy you were supposed to get in with for the money-wise, you know, to really kind of generate out of the Mexican household name into the other people's household name. You know, people tuned in, watched the Miguel Cotto fight. They saw Austin Trout do his thing. Hey, it's only right that you give him the opportunity to get in there and mix it up with you. I think that's the only fight that a lot of fight fans want to see right now. And it'd be a shame if he doesn't get it.
It's logical. Yep. I mean, it's a lot of money on the table there, because Al Haymon fighters don't come cheap. Champions don't come cheap, you know, belt holders. So Canelo and Floyd on the same card. I wonder if they're going to try to go split side again. You know, I'm going to try to get – I know we've got another interview coming up. I'm going to try to get Steve Kim in here by the end of the show. So he can probably give us some updates on things. And so I don't have to talk so much because I'm sick and I can't talk. But I'm curious to see – They're definitely not going to put Floyd and Canelo in that first slot. If they're going to fight, it's going to be later on in the year. I don't think they're going to fight. I really don't. I think they're going to keep tantalizing with us, and then Floyd, after his next fight, win or lose, is going to say, I'm a welterweight. That's where I'm going to stay.
Hmm.
No, I completely agree. And it just brings me back to the age factor. I don't know. I'm not so sure if Mayweather walks around at junior middleweight, but I don't know if it's going to be that easy for Mayweather to jump up and down. And
I don't think it is. I mean, we've seen this happen time and time again. You know, history repeats itself when fighters do this. We see guys jump up away, come back down, you know, and when they come back down, they end up looking not so super anymore. And a lot of times we see guys that, you know, a prime example, Roy Jones Jr., jumping up, come back down. He didn't look that great when he fought Antonio Tarver the first time, and the second time around, he got knocked out. Could that happen to Floyd Mayweather? It's a strong possibility. He got touched a whole lot with Miguel Cotto. Now, if he decides to fight a Guerrero, there's a strong possibility that the guy that is really a live underdog could have a very live night against a guy that likes to fluctuate his weight. You know, it's a dangerous thing to do, especially for fighters. It's not, you know, that famous quote, you know, you're not playing baseball. I mean, you're not playing boxing, you know. It's not like the other sports.
No, for sure. Yeah, you don't play boxing. You fight boxing. Yeah, that's definitely one of my favorite quotes. And I agree. I do think Floyd Mayweather will stay at 147. But the only concern is that after the Guerrero fight, honestly, I think he might get the Canelo fight, because after Robert Guerrero, I don't think there's nobody else for Floyd Mayweather to face. A lot of people are throwing Bradley around, but a lot of people forget that Bradley's under top rank than whoever.
Right.
Exactly. So we know the situation between Top Rank and Golden Boy. The only thing I can see happening, maybe, which will hurt Floyd, maybe he'll take a, maybe he'll try to bring maybe Danny Garcia or one of those 140 pounders, or maybe even Amir Khan, just for the simple fact that there won't be such a huge issue because those are Golden Boy fighters.
You know, the one thing about Floyd is he's a smart business guy, and I think he sees – I don't think he's free of Amir Khan. I honestly think he sees that already cashed out. It's done. You know, it's not going to generate the amount of money, especially to support his lifestyle. Canelo fight, I could really see that happening next year, and the reason being is because he let a big mega fight slip out of his hands with Manny Pacquiao. I think he's learned his lesson. I don't care what anybody says, you know, especially to the Floyd fans and stuff. They're like, oh, trust me, he don't care, you know, blah, blah, blah. Trust me. If anything, when a guy has a lot of money, they don't look at – it's like a high roller. You know, you remember that movie Casino where the guy was – the high roller was betting only $1,000, and he looked at it. Well, he wasn't just betting $1,000; he was losing $30,000. You know, and that's how these guys think and stuff. And I don't think he's going to want to do that again with Canelo. If anything, though, I think he's smart enough to understand not fight him right away. Let the kid build up. Let him get whatever fight that Golden Boy is going to throw at him, so that it gets him to a little bit more into the juicier spot, so that he could pull out the steak knife and have a good feeding.
No, for sure. Yeah, I agree. Like you said, I think Mayweather and Canelo both learned their lessons because Canelo was lined up to fight Cotto, and once Cotto lost a fight, you saw the look in Canelo's face. He left ringside right away,
Did you guys see this? I mean, was this me? But did Canelo's hair change after that Cotto?
The slick back.
Yeah, the slick back, but I think the redness kind of fell out of there. You know, I think the guy spray painted his hair, to tell you the truth, you know.
Yeah, right, the Just For Men. Yeah. Nah, man, for sure. Yeah,
he told him he's
going to
take
funny. He got the fuzzy beard going on with the slick back hair. It's cool, though. It's cool.
Yeah.
Like I was saying, though, I think Canelo and Mayweather both learned the lessons. I think Mayweather, even though he probably didn't see the fight, I know for a fact his phone must have been blowing up when Manny Pacquiao got knocked down, and I completely agree. I think he definitely learned his lesson, and who knows, maybe this 2013 is the last chapter of his career, and he wants to go out with a big bang, and maybe his former partner, which was 50 Cent, maybe he's right, maybe Floyd Mayweather doesn't have any other type of income coming in besides fighting and maybe some small sponsors, so who knows?
Yeah, speaking about 50, hey, thanks for calling in, brother. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, man.
Anyways, Fight Fans, you want to call?
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
347-215-7598. Speaking about 50 Cent, Gamboa was on the undercard of the Manny Pacquiao and Marquez fight, pay-per-view fight. I hope he learned a little bit, 50 Cent, in being a promoter and kind of having an understanding that you got to keep your fighter busy, you know. And I hope he puts in Gamboa a little bit more, just because of the simple fact that, you know, we saw ring rust there. And even if you're in the gym, and, you know, not everybody, just because the fact is you're in the gym, not everybody's going to perform the way like a Floyd Mayweather does, or other guys that are very active in the gym all the time. It takes fights. It takes real fights sometimes for the guys to really wake it and shake it and be properly prepared, you know. And Gamboa is one of those guys. And, you know, I think you even pointed it out one time, Gabriel. I think it was you that pointed it out the last time, where we're like, you know, when's the last time we've seen a Cuban not have good footwork, you know. And he's definitely a guy that needs to go back and learn that craft, you know. We're going to be calling in our next guest, which is Andre Diaz, his young upcoming documentary film maker. And then we're going to have Steve Kim about 7:15. He's going to make some breakthroughs over here on Leaving Rings to end out the year. Maybe give out his opinion who he thinks should be Fighter of the Year, Trainer of the Year, Round of the Year, or maybe Fighter of the Year. Anyways, stay tuned. We're going to call in our next guest really quick. If you Fight Fans, you want to tune in, you want to shine into the conversation, you certainly can here on Leaving the Ring. 347-215-7598. Trying to do a bunch of things all at once.
Stop doing that.
I know. I know. It kills me when I do that, man. I swear.
This is pretty funny. Steve actually sent me something as we're texting back and forth. In MMA, the Shale Sonnen, who's the advisor, I guess, on testosterone therapeutic use exemptions in Nevada, which is kind of funny if you know his history with synthetic testosterone. But he's kind of casting aspersions on the Jim Rome show on Showtime about Juan Manuel Marquez. He said,
really?
There are two tests you have. You've got the P test, but you've also got the visual test. When you take your robe off and you get in the ring, that's the first test. And to act as though all of us didn't go, something's going on there. He said, did he take something? Sure he did. Did he take something illegal? Well, according to the drug test, no. But he said that, he basically talked about a six-pack he'd never had before, and he said that Marquez miraculously went through puberty a second time before the fight. It's kind of interesting, because Chael Sonnen is a bit of an expert in that regard, so it's kind of interesting that he would say that. But, you know, that sport always kind of likes to cast aspersions on us. I mean, he literally could take out the name Marquez, start talking about the UFC, and he could just insert just about any fighter's name there, considering all their physiques. So it's a little bit of the pot calling the kettle black.
Yeah. Hey, send me that. I want to check that out. Let's call in our next guest here, Andre Diaz. Dre Diaz, well, I'm going to just call him Dre, and talk to him really quick about his documentary, The Pursuit. Get us his intake of a little bit of history of why he decided to do something like this. What drove him to do this?
Yeah, let me pick the two hardest things to be in: film and boxing.
Exactly. Hey, Dre, you there, brother?
I'm here, David. Yes.
How you doing, man? Hey, thanks for taking the time to speak to us here on Leaving Ring. So you got a documentary. It's a documentary series, or if you want to call it a reality series, called The Pursuit. And it's basically you're following a fighter, an upcoming fighter, and their trials, and you know, to their debut, or even in between. I think with four or five fights. The one that I watched was a fighter that had four fights and was leading into his fifth fight. So I gotta first applaud you for it, man. I loved it. I thought it was great. I'm gonna post it on my Facebook and I'll throw it out there on Twitter in a short bit when we get off the air. I want to ask you, what made you want to do something like that? I mean, you know, if there's one thing that me and Gabriel have learned from being part of the boxing, you know, folks, a media, whatever, there's no money really in it. It's just basically passion driven.
You're absolutely right, David. That's the main reason why I got into it, because I love the sport, and this is what I want to contribute towards it. I want to use the tools that I have and the ability that I have to contribute towards it. And I love doing it. You're right. It's not money driven. It's my passion for it. It's a deep passion for it. And I love it.
And I got the sense when you were filming it, you know, I knew exactly where you were going with it. That's why I sat through the whole thing and I was like, oh man, I like this, you know, because I'd like to see the point of a fighter that nobody really knows about. And really a fighter that nobody would probably even take a second look at, you know, at the moment,
right,
because
right.
of their record and stuff. And you decided
right.
to really pick on a subject that it's not going to really raise ears or anybody's eyebrows right away. You decided to pick on a subject that is foreign to a lot of folks just because the fact that he's not an MMA fighter, he's not a UFC fighter, he's a boxer. Two, he's not known. And three, he's still fighting the club fights. It doesn't have any strong points behind him, no promoter, no management. He's just a fighter trying to be gutsy and make a name for himself.
Right. It's definitely inspirational when you could watch somebody kind of starting at ground zero and really scratching and clawing to make something of himself. He doesn't have a mansion. He's not a prize fighter. He's not getting seven-figure paydays. But he loves boxing, he loves the sport, and he's giving it his all to try to make something of himself. That in itself is inspirational to me, and if you're a boxing fan, especially a boxing fan, or in generally just a fan of inspirational story, it's a great thing to watch, and you'll definitely enjoy it.
What's the kind of feedback you've been getting from this documentary series that you posted up on YouTube?
It's been great feedback so far. People that have seen it, and like you said, it's something that people aren't searching for because they are low level fighters. But that's why I want to really let people know about it, to go and check it out. And I want to continue doing it. I mean, the fighter that I did it on recently, he's 5-0, now he's 6-0, and he's going into his 7th fight in about a month. And
this is Amos Coward.
Amos Coward, yeah, real talented young kid, a lot of power, as a lightweight fighter. And I don't know if he's going to become a champion or not, but I really envy the people who really give it their all to try to make their dreams come true, and that's what it's really about. It's about really taking that step to just go after it.
You know, and that's the one thing that attracted me the most, and I liked. And it's, you know what, the whole low-end fighter, I got to tell you, to me, I don't even care about stuff like that. The kid had some talent. I like that. And you're really starting off in the beginning stage of his talent. And I like the fact that you caught that. We used to do a segment that was, the Prospect Watch. And we used to have a lot of prospects come on, and we used to, you know, just roll down that line. Remember that, Gabriel? And a lot of those kids,
yeah.
I think 10 out of those, you know, 10 interviews of those kids, 4 of them became world champions, or 4 of them
wow.
able to get in the eyes of the public, you know? So to me, a lot of times, that to me is the meat of the sport. It's not really the guys that already have a big name. It's that meat of the sport and the focus that we should have, you know? And that's what I liked what you did, is that you decided to really go with the meat of the sport, not with the whole banquet of it, you know, the champagne and the celebration. You decided to go through the backyard and go through the weeds, and that's a good thing. Now, was this your idea solely to do this, or did somebody kind of, you know, throw this at you and you said, you know what, I don't know, I'll give it a shot?
No, actually, I watched, obviously I'm a big fan, like most people are, of 24/7, and it inspired me. That's really what set it off. It inspired me, and I love the sport so much. I'm like, man, you know, I was into film prior to getting involved in this, and I was like, it'd be great to use my talents and skills to do something myself with a boxer who I could have, you know, access to and go and film them. So that's what kind of started off with me.
What was the most hardest part about filming this documentary? Because, you know, out of our experience, and you know, we're not saying we're filmmakers like you, bro. Yeah, you got it. Trust me. You know, me and Gabriel just kind of go on the wind of what we're doing and stuff. You know, but even though Gabriel has got some, he's got some background in filming and producing, does a great job. But what was the most difficult part of doing your filming and your scheduling? Because we all know fighters have a very weird schedule, and sometimes they don't meet that schedule. They'll tell you, I'll be there at 1, and they don't show up till 4 or 5, or they just don't show up.
Right. Well, I really didn't have that many issues. I mean, if there's an issue, it's probably waking up at 5, you know, or 4 in the morning to meet him for his run. That was kind of tough, but it was such an easy sacrifice, because I know they're going to be at the gym and at a certain time, and the times that I went, they've always been on time. I mean, I guess they're not big time yet to the point where they're standing people up, so
right.
I don't usually have that problem, but not really much problems at all. I mean, a lot of these guys are very grateful for the opportunity to put the spotlight on them, because like you said, there's not a lot of fighters at that level who have the spotlight and could have this type of work done on them on an independent level. So, I mean, HBO is not going to come knocking on these guys' doors. So it's a great thing to do for me for the fighters, so they can see something made about them, and they deserve it. In my opinion, I think they do. So these guys have been great. They're very appreciative. They never stand me up or keep me waiting. It's just been a great experience all around, and I can't wait to keep doing them. This is only the beginning. I want to keep doing them for new, different fighters that I could find, or people who are listening. If they know of anybody who definitely would be interested in something like this, you know, definitely get in contact with me, because this is not the end of it. I'm only getting started.
It's interesting. I'm watching this opening. You have the opening montage, and I've tweeted it out for people that are following the show, and either on Leave It in the Ring or on my Twitter, Gabriel Montoya, Gabriel_Montoya. What's been the most surprising thing? Because it's interesting watching, you have this montage of him in the gym getting ready to train, and then all the venues, all the different fight venues that he's been in, knocking people out and putting a hurting on people. But they're all such vastly different venues. What's been the most like surprising thing for you kind of heading into this world of boxing, which is kind of weird, and you're in one casino someplace, sometime, and then you're in a ballroom another time. What's been most, what one thing has stuck out to you the most?
I mean, I've been to a lot of, I've been going to a lot of fights locally, and I would say just actually going through it with the fighter and being in the locker room and going through it all, I would have to say the amount of what's at stake. And that's when you really wrap your head around it, it's a lot to kind of swallow, because it's not like a basketball season or a basketball player. You know, you lose a couple of games in college, well, you have next year. Your record kind of starts all over. You get a fresh start. And with boxing, you have the, you know, 21, 22-year-old young men that it don't have that luxury. You have to win to get noticed, to get notoriety. You have to keep winning. And that's a lot of pressure. And
yeah,
there's just a lot at stake. You know, your record doesn't start off next year. You lose, you keep that loss forever. You win, you keep it forever. So and that's why I love doing these type of documentaries on boxing, because there's really a lot at stake. And these guys are fighting for a career. They haven't made it yet, and they're fighting for a career. So, and they're fighting for to help their family, to make a better life for themselves and the ones around them. So winning, they have to win. There's not really much of an option.
And the trainer, too, you know, Cruz, his trainer, that guy's got...
Roy Cruz, yeah.
Yeah, Roy Cruz. He's got a... People don't realize what being a trainer really is. It's like panning for gold constantly. And there's a certain amount of trainers in each gym. A certain amount of talent walks through the door. Everybody's kind of fighting secretly over that talent, trying to get to it, trying to usurp each other. There's so much going on. Like you said, there's so much at stake. Everybody's trying to have a career. You know, they
exactly.
do this, but they don't. You know, you're not getting paid. I mean, if you don't, you know, I train all the time, and you watch these guys, and you're like, how do they make money? It's by, you know, they get maybe an individual guy. Somebody gives them a few bucks for doing the pads. It's a rough hustle.
It is.
No, you really captured it nicely, man. I really, and I put it on my Facebook. I've got it on the Twitter out there, and people hopefully retweet it. It's really quality stuff. It's really giving back to the sport. I applaud it, man. Well done.
I appreciate that. I appreciate you guys really having me on. This is my third one that I've done. I've done one on two boxers, and I did also one. I got a chance to work with an NBA player, which was a great experience. But even working with somebody on that level, it's just you can't duplicate the excitement
right.
that's involved in boxing. Nothing could. I mean, it's very tough to really duplicate that. And wrapping the hands and the buildup and the tension and it's nothing like it to me.
No, that last hour heading into before you head into the fight, and there's something different too when you, especially because you're filming it and you're so involved with these guys' lives, when you're watching them fight, you're fighting, you're right there with them, you know, because
absolutely,
you know,
and
you,
I try to keep the camera. I try not to get emotionally involved, and it's very difficult sometimes because it's about the documentary. It's not really about how I feel. So I can't. If my guy gets knocked out, I got to be able. I can't lose focus on what I'm trying to do. So, I mean, anything can happen in a fight. So you just got to be prepared for anything and try to let your emotions interfere with the work, which is tough.
Absolutely,
I can imagine. Where does this ultimately head for you? I mean, is this? Because this is, what, 16 minutes, 50 seconds? I mean, are you going to go short film festival? Is it a series? How do you review the whole thing?
It's a series. I'm going to continue doing them. Obviously, what I would love to do eventually is I think this definitely should be something seen on a larger scale. Hopefully, if I can keep doing them and they keep growing and the following keeps growing, I would love to get this on TV because I want to continue doing it for the guys who are on the climb up and those guys who are just who aren't really well known, because I really think those guys really deserve a spotlight along with the guys who are well known. So Ultimately, that's my goal with everything is to eventually one day get this on television. I think that'd be a beautiful thing for the sport. I think that'd be a beautiful thing for the fighters. And I think it'd be a great, it's inspirational for the people who watch it. And for anyone who watches it, I think it's an inspirational thing to see.
Yeah, it's almost like a mini Hoop Dreams, you know? And
yeah.
You never know where these guys, where it's going to go. You know?
Absolutely,
and,
yeah.
One punch, I mean, Manny Pacquiao knows it better than anybody, Paul Williams. One punch can change everything, you know?
Right, man,
absolutely. Say, Steven Seagal in the corner of Manny Pacquiao was a bad omen. I just, he finished this whole ring walk, and then, like, at the end, Steven Seagal. Like, I'm not into the Illuminati, but if there's such a thing as a celebrity whacker, I would have to think it's Steven Seagal.
I think so. Or Mitt Romney, you know?
Or Mitt Romney.
Yeah. I was going to say Mitt Romney. I mean, he was off on the wrong foot. I mean, it was just there was a lot of things he probably should have changed before the fight. I'll definitely say that.
I thought it was going downhill when the ring walk. There was no – it wasn't the Rocky theme or Karate Kid song coming on. I said, oh, dude, where's all those you know, ring walk songs that you normally come out with? But anyways, hey, Andre, man, hey, wish you all the luck, brother. Continue what you're doing. Keep us updated. And, man, feel free to always call in and chop it up with us here on Leaving the Ring Radio, brother.
Absolutely, guys. I appreciate it, David. Thank you very much. And anytime, definitely. Thank you guys for having me on.
All right, brother.
How can we keep track of this?
Yeah.
Throw out all your information.
Sorry. My website is smtvchannel.com. It stands for Saturday Mornings, my production company. But, smtvchannel.com. You could reach me through my YouTube channel. And, so you can watch all the other two episodes of The Pursuit on there as well. So you can catch all three episodes. And hopefully we'll have another episode out within a couple of months. We want to keep doing them.
You know what? And with the permission of Andre here, man, I'll post it on our website as well, too, so people can tune in and watch it.
Absolutely. That'd be terrific.
Yeah, all right, brother.
I just threw the subscription up and liked it and the whole bit. Yeah, man. It's something that it's a positive. It's really nice, man.
Yep.
Well done. So
absolutely.
We'll
so, I can't wait, guys. Thank you very much.
All right, brother. Cool. You have a good night. Thank you.
All right, man.
All right, you
take
too.
Care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, and that's something I just, man, I really, really love when guys do and
yeah.
You know, they go out of the way and they say, you know, I love the sport, I'm gonna shoot for it and you know, you're being innovative and what more can you ask for if you're a fight fan? You know, and we've said this plenty of times. We've had guys, because we've had these rants before, get up, you know, do something for the sport, knock on somebody's door, talk to them, you know, talk to your neighbor about the last night fights and stuff. And I've had a lot of people go, hey, Dave, after your guys' conversation on the radio with you and Gabriel, I decided to start writing. I decided to start doing this. I started to pick up. When I used to do YouTube videos, I used to have tons of people, you know, hit me up and say, you know, you're the reason why I started to do YouTube videos. You're the reason why I did predictions, you know, even radio, you know, you're the reason why I started doing radio. You know, you inspired me, et cetera, you know, and I think that's a big plus for our sport. You know, the reason I started doing this is because I felt like the sport of boxing didn't get the coverage and the love that it's supposed to get. You know, I really felt that was lacking, and that's why I decided to start, you know, I started doing the YouTube in the beginning, and then from there to Leaving the Ring, and then doing, you know, we're working on our documentary, which we're still working on, and I threw out our first one, The Hurt Business, and then we did our live Ustream, all that stuff, you know, and that's just to inspire other folks, too, to try to, you know, do something with it as well, and just keep the sport alive. But anyways,
yeah, I mean, there's a million stories in this sport. You know, that's the beautiful thing about it. And like I said, you know, we've kind of talked about not reform, but yeah, I guess that's where we're headed is reform. But you could just pick a corner and make that your corner and figure out, you know, whether it's your beat. Like, you know, I've had like different beefs or whatever with different writers, but my feeling is always this, like, you know, wherever you are, you should be an expert about that area. You should, whatever area you decide to study or whatever area is your beat, you know, covering it. I have the luxury of the guy that we're about to call in 2 minutes of being his partner. And nobody has the beat of boxing like this guy. This afforded me the luxury of pursuing PEDs for like three years and kind of my niche within boxing. All writers should do that. Nothing was more frustrating on the West Coast when the, like, Morales Garcia too was breaking, it was broken by a West Coast writer in Scott Hale, but I wanted more details, and I wasn't really getting them, the right questions out of the media. I know I shouldn't be critical of the other writers. It's like bad form, but we can do better.
Yeah.
We should be doing better.
We should be able to do better, you know.
After 3 years, man, it's – I'm sorry, but is this fight going to be under USADA testing? Should be standard in Golden Boy Conference by all the writers. The first guy gets shut down, two or three other guys should ask that question.
Absolutely.
The minute a guy gets shut down for asking a question, that question should be the most important question. Why, you know?
Right.
We should be doing more. But let's get Steve on.
Let's get him on here on Leaving the Ring, you know. It's always fun when we get Steve Kim here on the show. This video's good, man.
Hello.
Steve, what's up, brother? This is Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya on Leaving the Ring. How you doing, brother?
I am doing well, guys. Happy New Year, Merry Christmas, a joyous Kwanzaa to everybody.
There you go.
Fantastic, man. Happy New Year apocalypse.
Yeah, I've been on my deathbed, but I've been enjoying your tweets, especially the one where you were saying that, no joke, Asians can't drive. And I was like, is Steve Kim having like an American moment, or what's going on?
Well, I tell you, when I was in China last week, it was so funny, where literally everyone drives like an Asian, and one of the TV crew guys, who's a white guy, Mark Ballinger, real nice guy. He was one of the TV crew, and we were being taken up to the reception after the fight cards. And he was white knuckly because we're in this van, and there's literally no rules in China, in the Hainan province. I mean, you think you're getting sideswiped and T-boned and rear-ended, and you think you're going to crash into big rigs the whole time. And he had the greatest quote of the week. He said, he looks at me, he goes, you know, I can't even be mad at Asian drivers in America. I mean, this is where they get it from. They don't know any better.
Right. That's great, man.
That's like, yeah, when I drove in Mexicali for the Angulo fight, I was like, good Lord. That's why Koreatown's the most dangerous place to live in America.
Central Americans and Indians
joined together.
Yeah, and I read your retweet. I guess five Asians assaulted another Korean at a bulgogi house. I mean, you know, this is why I don't go to Korean barbecue. My life's in danger, man. I mean, we're headed for self-destruction. Self-destruction. We're headed for self-destruction.
Forget about the zombie apocalypse, you know. Let's worry about the drivers out there.
Well, some would say we drive like zombies,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
There you go.
But anyway, guys, here's the big thing. How heartbroken are you that Ward Pavlik, because that fight's not going to happen, we are missing out on a 16-1 fight on HBO. Doesn't that break your heart?
It
really is a shame.
It breaks my shoulder.
Yeah,
well, I
don't think we lost anything.
Well, we might end up with better fights. I mean, if Pavlik fights Abraham or, let's say, Lucien Boutte, again, no one is saying that Andre Ward is not the best super middleweight in the world. I think he has conclusively proven that, whether you like his style or not. But there's a bit of a Klitschko dynamic going on here in a sense that there's a clear number one in Andre Ward. But you go through 2 through 7 with Butte, Frock, Kessler, and some other guys, there's a lot of good fights to be had. I mean, listen, Kessler, Frock 2, I believe that's going to happen. I believe May 11th, that's the date I'm told. I want someone to show it. I think that's a great fight. Pavlik Butte or Pavlik Abraham, I think those are much more crowd-pleasing and entertaining fights than what I thought was a sacrificing of the ghost at the hands of Andre Ward.
Yeah, I wasn't really into the fight. I didn't want to see it. I knew exactly what was going to happen. It was going to be brutal. And it was kind of going back to like the franchises that we almost lost or were damaged in Hatton and Cotto. Like Pavlik, I don't know if he's necessarily a franchise, but you can do something with him if you match him right, and you can extend that career and make some action fights, which is good for boxing. Putting him in with Ward, it was just like, I guess we're done with the Kelly Pavlik show because he's going to get brutalized in there and probably knocked out in about 8 or 9 rounds, which is what Andre Ward wants to do. Like he always said, we're putting it together, how to knock people out. Well, a big part of that is matchmaking. I just wasn't into the fight. And I think if we can get things that come out of it that are better, all the better.
I agree with you. I mean, it was like it's like having a train with not with their wheels off of the track, you know, and he's just going into a train wreck and stuff. It didn't make any sense. I didn't like it. I like the talk about Arthur Abraham. I think that's it makes more sense. It's going to be a fun fight. Both guys are slow, and you know they're out of their prime, but they can still bang. They can still bleed each other up a little bit.
Well, the one thing about Abraham that I like from a stylistic standpoint, Lucien Bouté can still move. He's still fairly fleet of foot. There's going to be lateral movement. That has traditionally troubled Kelly Pavlik, who, in all honesty, above 160 has not been very good, going all the way back to the second fight with Jermaine Taylor, which was a contracted rematch, I believe at a catchweight of 164.
Right.
You know, you look at Abraham, Abraham kind of fights in that catch-and-counter, turtle-shell defense of his. I think it's much more conducive for Pavlik having success. But one dynamic, and I wrote about this in my article that'll be coming up tonight, is that March 2nd, okay, which originally was January 26th, then became February 23rd, that is not a top-ranked Pavlik date, guys. That is a Dan Goosen slash Andre Ward date. So there's even talk, and again, with Al Haymon, all things are possible, that may not be a Kelly Pavlik date, but you could just see Chris Areola fight Bermaine Stiverne as the headliner on Boxing After Dark. So there's a lot of moving parts here. While we could talk about who Pavlik may face next, you still have to decide, number one, who gets that slot, number two, what's the money. Then there's issues of whether you're going to travel to a foreign country, and this is another issue. When networks like HBO and Showtime even cross the border to Mexico or Canada, that costs them money from a production standpoint. So there's a lot of things that need to be figured out coming into the new year.
What are the big things, what are the trends that you're looking to see more of in 2013? I mean, we saw the rise of Adrian Broner, Leo Santa Cruz broke through. Donaire's kind of run out of the showcase opponents, now needs to get real. What are you looking forward to next year?
Just one fight between Golden Boy and Top Rank. I think to me that was the biggest story that I think people should harp on, more than sanctioning bodies or anything else or HBO and Showtime. I think we need to get these companies to start making fights together because we're missing out on too much good stuff. But a trend that I like this year, and I hope it continues, with a little bit more common sense, and I understand it's a process, Gabe, I like the fact we didn't have that many fights at Indian casinos or far-flung casinos with nobody there, that me and you living in L.A. and Dave, you're in California, we got to see, you know, I don't want to say major, but cable premium level cards on HBO and Showtime on a regular basis in regular major league venues. Now, sometimes the venues are too big, and I've always said, if you have a size 5 foot, don't buy a size 10 shoe. In other words, sometimes it's okay to go to a smaller venue or a casino if it makes geographic logic.
Right.
And I love the fact that already we're seeing – I listen, the Barclay Center, that's going to become regular. Hopefully they price their shows a little bit more logically. I'm hearing that they are already doing that with much better success than October 20th.
Nice.
Also, January 19th at the theater at the Madison Square Garden, very good triple header on HBO. That show, I think, will sell out. It's doing very well at the box office. There's already going to be some shows planned for the Staples Center. So I like the fact that not every show is stuck at the Mandalay Bay or MGM Grand. That certainly has its place. But I think last year the thing that I liked, and maybe it's my Southern California bias being a native here, is the fact that local boxing fans on a consistent basis got to see shows near their zip codes.
You know, I like the fact that CBS kind of stepped up at the ending of the year. I'm hoping that trend continues. I had a chance to talk to Showtime's Matt Donovan, and I think you had got up and you went off to go see the Cotto and Trout ending series. But I asked him something, and I'm wondering if you know anything about this, because at the time he said, I don't have the answer for you at the moment. But I asked him, what kind of numbers was CBS looking for in order to continue that type of series on their network?
Well, the official numbers, and when it comes to the Nielsens, these are public records, so they cannot fudge them. So this is not going to be like pay-per-view numbers that are awfully questionable or gate receipts, which can certainly be papered. The average number of viewers across the board was 1.8 million. Now, let me put this in perspective, Dave. There's two ways to look at it. For a network show, 1.8 is very pedestrian. If this is a sitcom, you wouldn't get to the second episode. That thing would be canceled really quick. However, it's a little bit different with sports. I think two things bode well. Number one, 1.8, that average viewership is higher than any show, boxing programming on HBO or Showtime. So it goes to show you the type of platform CBS is compared to either premium cable network. And number two, another great thing was that from the Indiana-Butler college basketball game that went into overtime, they retained right around 90% of their audience.
Wow.
And I made a joke on Twitter last week that I didn't know that many Mexicans were Hoosiers or Bulldogs. I mean, but that's good. And I've also talked to some people behind the scenes. No official ratings have been released yet by NBC, but I heard that the Cunningham-Adam Eck fight, regardless of what you thought of the decision, that also did very well. But I think the official numbers will be out soon. So do I believe that it was a positive first step and it bodes well for the future? In my opinion, yes.
What do you think? Go ahead, Dave.
I was going to say, what do you think about the outcome of the Adam Eck and Cunningham fight? Do you think that's a major effect in terms of networks kind of cringing, going, well, I don't know if we want to do the game because of the response, the huge response a lot of fight fans, you know, felt that Cunningham was robbed, you know, was undermined of a win that he deserved?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I thought Adam Eck clearly lost. He looked like a heavy, bulky guy that has lost his reflexes, was very slow off the trigger, okay? And I'm a big Adam Eck guy, but I think I've seen him lose twice this year. I thought a one-armed Eddie Chambers beat him back in June. Okay, with that being said, it's not a good look, but I don't think that it was a completely overblown, scandalous decision where network executives would say, okay, we don't want to be involved in the red light district of sports. I actually think it was a pretty good prize fight, provided good television, which Main Event has done throughout the year with NBC. I think that Kathy Duva's people skills and her overall relationship with that network is certainly a plus. But do I think that it was the type of decision where people say, we're going to have to get out of this sport? No. Also, I think the ratings, and again, networks are programmers and they care about eyeballs. And that's the one thing about boxing, guys. It's always been interesting to me. Taking away what Showtime and HBO pay per dollar at that ESPN, let's say mid-level or lower level, boxing traditionally per dollar does a very good rating. For the type of license fee that these shows get, to get the numbers they're getting is very good, actually. Now, what I believe will be the seminal moment is, will NBC or CBS or anyone else, will they pay, let's say, instead of $150,000 for a show, I wonder if they'll ever pay and decide to make that jump to do a $500,000 fight. Because think about it. Leo Santa Cruz was a stay-busy fight, and the other fight was really supported by Polish TV and the fact that all these guys came relatively cheap. I mean, I look at it in this way. If you could do 1.8 million viewers for Leo Santa Cruz, who is relatively unknown even now, despite the year he had, what could you do with the really well-known fighter, let's say, in a better time slot? So I've always said that boxing, I think, has to find a way to get off the welfare check and the over-reliance on the cable premium license fee and actually get back to the biggest platforms that are available today. Even in this internet iPad era, you still have these numbers that HBO and Showtime each have between 20 and 30 million subscribers, depending on which reports you believe. But NBC, CBS, and ABC, they're all in about 120 million homes. So just think about the reach that's been lost, let's say the last 20 to 25 years.
Does Golden Boy have a chance? Let me ask you this. Does Golden Boy have a chance with Leo Santa Cruz in building a CBS fighter, not a pay-per-view fighter, which to me I think it would make more sense in building on CBS, which would lead into right away roll into being a pay-per-view fighter?
Well, you know what's funny? He reminds me of those guys that were built in the 80s.
He does, yeah.
Action guys, very fan-friendly, pleasing to the eye. They were telegenic. And at least in the beginning, they were relatively cheap. You know, before Boom Boom Mancini became this big star, he was built on CBS. I've read the Boom Boom Mancini book, and I read another book on my way to Hainan, China. It was called Behind the Scenes, and it was Terry O'Neill, who was one of the major producers at CBS, who talked about how Boom Boom Mancini was important for the growth of not only boxing at CBS, but for the overall sports franchise. I think Leo Santa Cruz is in a very, very good position because not only does he have a fan base that is building, okay, But he's in a weight class where he's not going to make a lot of money, so he's very affordable. Until he gets to that level where he maybe lands Abner Mares, yes, do I think that his fights fall within that economic price range of consistently being on CBS maybe once or twice a year? Absolutely. I think it's going to be a lower weight class guy who is at least reasonable in his demands and understands the marketing potential that is there. So, I mean, just think about it. I think 2.5 to 3 times more people saw his fight when we were there at the sports ring a couple of weeks ago compared to when he won his title against Vusi Malinga on Showtime.
Right. Something we talked about earlier in the show, I'm curious. I know you've written about this. What do you do to get the African-American marketplace, the urban marketplace, as Bob Arum calls it, how do you get them involved? Do you think that's an untapped market that's integral to the growth of the sport?
I guess it is. I mean, because think about it, that's still a significant amount of boxing history. Everyone loves a good fight. And, you know, in terms of tapping into the urban market, I think the guy that's a key figure here is Adrian Broner. I think Broner's fun. I think he's exciting. I think he has a personality that resonates. Whether you love him or hate him, you want to see him. From what I understand, HBO will be signing him, or they're debating a multi-fight contract moving forward that is almost, I believe, unprecedented in the amount of activity that he will have over the length of this deal. I've been told that he'll actually be more active than Oscar De La Hoya and Floyd Mayweather were at the same stages of their careers. I think he has the ability more than anyone else of the African-American fighters to really become that next guy post-Mayweather. And, you know, we're going to see what happens.
And he sells tickets at home.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting. I guess Golden Boy and Al Haymon believe that maybe Atlantic City is their new adopted home, kind of like the way Kelly Pavlik from Youngstown, Ohio, did very well in Atlantic City back about 3-4 years ago. I am interested to see, after this fight, it looks like Gavin Reese, from what I've been told, will be fighting him February 16th. I guess there are rumors of him fighting May 4th on the Mayweather undercard. I actually want to see, against a solid opponent, what Adrian Broner could do in Cincinnati next summer, because I think that will really tell you what type of marketing growth he's gone under. I mean, guys, I give Broner credit, and obviously he has a big sphere of influence as it relates to Al Haymon, but this guy has been as active as any fighter in recent memory that has fought consistently on HBO or Showtime.
Do you even think he's in the Fighter of the Year category, or who is your Fighter of the Year?
Well, my Fighter of the Year, honestly, I kind of wanted to leave it vacant, but then I thought that would be copping out because there were some solid guys. Listen, Leo Santa Cruz, I love the activity. I think he was the breakout star, if you want to call it star, but breakout boxer of the year.
Right.
I thought it came down. I thought Sergio Martinez is very overlooked. Beat a top 5, 6, 7 middleweight in dramatic fashion or exciting fashion against Macklin. Had a seminal moment, a defining moment against Chavez. Came through with that. I thought he dominated 95% of that fight. But I thought it came down to Marquez and Donaire. And I went with Donaire just on activity and the fact that there are probably less suspicions of him. Let's be honest about it. But, you know, overall, guys, my 2012 K-9 Awards, part one is out. Part two will be out on Saturday. Even though we didn't get Pacquiao Mayweather, guys, if you look at the Fighter of the Year, and you look at Round of the Year, Fight of the Year, Knockout of the Year, I thought 2012 was a very good year for boxing. I thought we saw good fights. We saw some memorable moments. We saw guys stand up. And we saw some stuff that I don't think we're going to forget anytime soon. So I think I would say 2012, to me, I thought was very productive for the business of boxing.
I thought it was a great year. I had a really good time. You know, it was good fights, a lot of ups and downs. What do you think is going to be the big issue? Do you think that the PED thing is going to keep going? Do you think the drug testing thing is going to be there? Are people going to focus in on judging? Or is boxing just going to kind of roll along as it always does?
Well, I think there's going to be growth or at least discussions within those subjects. Listen, bad decisions in boxing, till we get new judges or a new generation, I think that issue will always be there. Listen, we're going to have bad decisions next year and for the next 75 to 100 years after that. It's because boxing judging is interesting to me. I've always said it is – a very subjective art form where you have to be trained to be objective, and beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So that's fine. And I don't think every decision that I disagree with is a robbery. Sometimes there are close fights where you disagree. As it relates to the PED issue, it is certainly now something that is being discussed, which is the first step. And then now we have to be realistic. But I do think there has to be a sea change. And I've said this before, I would hate to see the Ben Johnson moment in boxing, because the Ben Johnson moment in boxing is going to be a fighter that's going to be very, very badly damaged, maybe fatally, against a fighter that was obviously on steroids or some other illegal, illicit substance. And then I would hope that it wouldn't take that sacrifice for boxing to say all we had to do was really implement higher standards, some random testing that could be helped fund by the promoters who then stay out of the process, and then make everyone adjust. I mean, guys, look at baseball. In baseball, you still have your guys like Melky Cabrera and other players that are obviously breaking the rules, and they're disciplined. But the days of Brady Anderson hitting 50 home runs from his leadoff spot are over. I've always said you're never going to catch all the cheating, and you're not going to stop the cheating. What you're trying to do is to put higher hurdles and bigger impediments to close the gap. Nonito Donaire, with his own volition, has decided to do that. But, see, the problem with that is I don't believe in selective enforcement. I don't believe in selective prosecution. What Nonito Donaire is doing, which is certainly admirable, shouldn't necessarily be the one in a million. It should actually be the norm. And I really believe that if you implemented tougher standards, if the ABC got involved and got all the commissions to stay in line with tougher testing, more out-of-competition testing, and then harsher discipline, which I think is equally important, I think at that point, I think the culture would change. Now, I'm not saying you would eradicate cheating. I think you would actually affect change in two ways. Either guys are going to stop cheating, or the cheaters are just going to get better at what they do. But again, you are putting higher impediments to what is taking place.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to improve. We'll just see. You know, we could do a whole segment on it. I know you don't have a lot of time. Take us out. What's your last word? What's the latest going on?
Well, a couple of things. I'm writing this on my news. No matter what you hear, and maybe I'm being told wrong by Steven Espinoza of Showtime, Hank Lundy is still going to be fighting Lucas Matisse. I know there's a lot of reports that he had been replaced by Mike Dallas, and you got an email from someone that was asking him about that fight. According, again, to Steven Espinoza, who I think would know, given that it's his network doing this fight, it will be Hank Lundy on January 26th. And that fight card will not be in L.A. now. That'll be at the Hard Rock Casino. There are some booking issues that relates to the Nokia Theater. Also, Gavin Reese, as I mentioned earlier, who I think is a pretty solid prize fighter, will be facing Adrian Broner. And I know some people don't like that fight, but right now, if you look at 135, Ricky Burns simply, for whatever reason, did not want that fight on that date. So that's who Broner is going to face next. And talking to some people, specifically Greg Cohen of Cohen Promotions, who handles the career of Austin Trout, he believes that he is right in the thick of things as it relates to Canelo Alvarez. And I got to give Canelo credit. If that's a fight that's going to happen in the spring, I will say this. I think that he's going to prove a lot of people wrong in terms of just how challenged does he want to be. Because I think some of the criticism has been overblown in a sense that, guys, September 15th, he went through everybody. I mean, that thing was Ripley's Believe It or Not, the way guys are dropping off left and right, from Paul Williams to James Kirkland to Victor Ortiz. I have a hard time being too critical of that process.
That's true.
He was in line to face Miguel Cotto. That didn't work out. And now if he faces Austin Trout, who promotionally, you don't face a guy like that. He's a big, strong, solid, athletic, left-handed 54-pounder. And if he takes them on and he beats them, I think that really is a defining moment for Canelo. And Greg Cohen said, hey, well, that the actual plan, or what's been talked about, is having the winner of Guerrero Mayweather face the winner of Trout Alvarez. But with that being said, guys, as we turn to the new year, we don't have either fight signed. But I do believe that Guerrero Mayweather, I thought from the very beginning, guys, that was going to be the fight. I never believed for one second that Canelo was going to fight Mayweather next.
No, no, it doesn't make any sense. You don't fight a guy like Austin Trout. It's like you're giving him a chance at greatness. I think he wins that fight. I was kind of lean with Austin if the Canelo fight was made. I hope it does, though. Well, Steve, as always, man, this is great having you on, and all year you've been on and been great. And I'll see you next week.
I'll see you Monday. All right, then, Dave, have a great New Year, man. We'll
you too, brother.
All right, have a great New Year, Steve.
Bye, guys.
All right, man.
Bye.
Take care.
Steve Kim here for Max Boxing with us on Leaving the Ring. Always fun when he comes on, gives us some great, great insight, and always leaves you going, man, I want a little bit more. Can't we add another 5 or 10 more minutes before you go?
Yeah, I mean, he's. I want to hear about the China trip. That's just hilarious to me.
Yeah, definitely, it's tough, man. Anyways, we're almost up for that hour. We want to pull up the fight schedule. I don't think there's a whole lot of fights going on, but there is some.
Talk about something while I do that. I'm so whacked out.
I definitely will. You know, again,
man.
Didn't have a chance to say Merry Christmas on our last show because we didn't have one. And sorry, we didn't do a reward show or anything like that. We normally do something at the end of the year. Like last year, we did our Christmas list. It was just crazy. It's been a crazy couple of months here. We're going to get back in the grind of things. I know we keep saying we're going to do that. And I apologize to a lot of our listeners who
Christmas.
I know. Yeah.
We get busy. And you got a family. I get busy. It's just my cats. You know, I have to get them things. And
yeah.
Kidding, actually. I don't get my cats anymore. December 31st, Monday, I guess. Let me back up. There's really not a lot of fights going on here, man. There's nothing on the fight schedule. But let's get to Monday. We got December 30th, Sunday, 2012, at the Sports Palace in Quant, Moscow, Russia. Oleg Moskiev, 36-7 versus Owen what the heck Beck, 29-11. It's like the Packers and the Lions, like when they're not very good, you know, playing each other on Christmas or something. December 31st, 2012, at the Otis City Gymnasium in Tokyo, Japan, Takashi Uchiyama, 18-0-1 versus Brian Vasquez, 29-0 for the WBA junior lightweight belt. Yota Sato, 25-2-1 versus Ryo. Akaho, 19-0-2 for the WBC junior bantamweight belt. And then Tepereth Kokijim, 21-2 versus Kohei Kono, 27-7 for the WBA junior bantamweight belt. That should be a fun show coming to a stream near you. You probably have to check out like Sweet Boxing, at Sweet Boxing on Twitter. That guy will probably know how to get a hold of these fights, but that's a way to ring in the new year. At the Bodymaker Coliseum in Osaka, Japan, Kazuto Aoka, 10-0 versus Jose Alfredo Rodriguez, 28-1 for the WBA junior flyweight belt, and Ryu Miyazaki, 17-0-3 versus Pornsawan Porpramuk, 26-4-1 for the WBA strawweight belt. That should be a fun card. Japan knows how to get down on New Year's Eve, dude. Just throw a bunch of title bouts.
Did you say porn swan?
Yeah, I did. Porn swan.
Porn swan.
Yeah. And you know they call them porn for short.
Right.
That's awesome.
That's a great name there, you know, porn swan.
Yeah. Hey. It's porn swan.
You've just been porn swan. Anyways, we got a few more minutes here on Leaving the Ring, so if you want to call in really quick and get your 2 cents in on the show, Leaving the Ring Radio, 347-215-7598. We'll be back next week on Thursday. Sorry we didn't have a chance to say Merry Christmas, but we're going to say Happy New Year's. Be sure you drive safe and everything. I see we've got a couple calls on the board, so I'll let Dave really quick check to see if anybody wants to talk here before we end the show here on Leaving the Ring, man. I really appreciate everybody that called in and everybody that's been hitting us up on Gmail and hitting up the website at leavingringradio.com. And be sure to catch Norte de Boxeo. The Boxing Fix will return. So everybody's been asking for the Boxing Fix. Like, well, what happened to Josh McDaniel and everybody? They will return. Josh McDaniel at the moment right now is out of commission. You know, wish his grandfather all the luck. And, okay, let's get somebody in really quick. Rob Regal, what's up, brother? You want to talk Manny Pacquiao? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what's up, guys? Happy holidays. Hey, I just want to touch real quick on what y'all think of Mercedo Guess's meltdown. He had that deer in the headlight look on that fight.
God, you know, man, you know, Vincent Parr, we've had him on the show. He's a good guy. We met him a few times. And, you know, I think it was just one of those nights. I think they thought that, you know, Vasquez was not going to be so quick-footed. They were going to have a chance to maybe trap him, get him into a gunfight, and hopefully be able to plant some real hard bullets. But instead, they end up getting smoke. It's just one of those things. They got to go back to the drawing board. Just suck it up. I don't think it was that – I wouldn't say that mentally damaging, but it's definitely a mental note that you have to try to train for all aspects of what might happen in a fight.
Well – yeah, I mean, I think it's the difference between where Mercito is when he's going for a title and, like, say, Abner Morris. Abner's kind of – they're kind of similar. They're utilitarian fighters. They're not great at one thing. They're like a Swiss Army knife. You know, they've got to be good at a lot of things. And Mercito, I think he's got the tools and everything. I got to say, who's going to look good against Vasquez, you know? That's
right.
A really tough style. So I don't think there's any shame in losing to that guy. I just hope that he learns from it. But how many times are you going to face a style like that also? I think against a more conventional fighter that had a belt, Mercedo's title shot would have been a different story. Against Vasquez, dude, you know, that guy's funky. You know, what can you say? You know, and he's got a belt for a reason. So I think Mercedo can come back from it. I just think they got to stop talking title shot now. They got to, you know, 3-4 fights, rebuild, and get more depth as a fighter and learn from those mistakes, and they'll be fine.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't think it's – like I said, I think it's just more of a mental going back to the drawing board and really, really just analyzing more than an A fight plan, which is rely on his power and his speed. You got to rely on a couple of other things, you know. But I think they'll bounce back. I don't see them not having a problem. But and I agree, the whole Vasquez thing. I mean, I don't think you realize how quick he is on his feet until you get in there in the ring with him.
Yeah, I mean, real quick. Also, what do you think of the first fight of the first card? I was pretty impressed with a Stukey's fighter. He showed a lot of guts, but Fortuna, I know he had a hurt shoulder, but I think he was trying to imitate Sergio a little too much. You know what I mean? He's not Sergio, but
right.
I know he had a shoulder injury.
He didn't – the first time I saw him was at Sergio's gym, and he wasn't doing all the hands-down stuff. He didn't do that for a couple fights after that, and it's the last couple that he's really started to really imitate Sergio, and I'm not sure if it's completely working for him. It's a choice, but I think he's – the things that I thought Fortuna – to get better, haven't seen. Rather than tighten his defense, it seems like it's loosened.
Right. Yeah.
That's not what he needed to do. He needed to get sharper with his punches and shorter with his punches. And I think he's devastating because I think his power is very. And I think he's a real game fighter. I really like him a lot. I'm not sure the direction they're going is the right one. I wish that Gabby Sarmiento was still there to mold him.
Yeah. No, I agree. You know, with Patrick Hyland, who's the fighter for Snooki, it really tells you. I mean, I don't know how a lot of other people felt about it, but it really.
People said they didn't even belong in the ring with Fortuna. I thought that was. I was like, well, I'm not so sure about that. I mean, Javier's barely getting tested right now. We barely know anything about him. I was when he was. He was real crazy and wild. He comes in too close. He squares up. He's a counter left hook knockout waiting to happen.
Yeah, he definitely had more skills than what I was led to believe, and he really got a really good chin, you know. But I still say that it was a bit rushed to put him in there with Fortuna. It was a gamble, and it was a massive gamble, and that's what you see the perks of a young management, you know, where they're going to take these gambles. They go back with a drawing board for him. I think with any other guy than with Javier, he's going to have he's going to either give him a much more tough fight where he can win over a decision, or he's going to do well if he's matched correctly, you know, and be developed, because there was some skill level out of him, and he could take a good punch, you know. But they hate to see him keep continuously be thrown in there with some hard punchers where it's just going to end his career into a short one before we can really find out what the kid is really made of.
You know, Take it back to Mercedo Hesta, just because, like, Linus is throwing it out there. Just last word on it. Have you ever seen The Replacement with Keanu Reeves? It's like he says, you know, it's quicksand. You know, like one thing happens and then another thing happens and it just gets worse and worse. And I think that's what happened to Mercedo Hesta in that fight.
Right.
I think he got mesmerized a little bit. And each round probably, like, the time felt weird. Like, he couldn't tell what 3 minutes felt like. I bet you it was a little disorienting, a little strange fight for him. He was not himself. And I think a lot of that had to do with the guy he was facing. It just happens. I don't think people should make too big of a deal out of it. I think the bigger deal he makes out of it, the worse it will be. I think he just learns from it and learn to let your hands go and just start. Like Abner Morris would have cut off the ring and just started throwing punches and tried something new.
Right.
Mercedo never really went into a different gear. There was no urgency.
No, it was more or less like he was just waiting for the gas to finally empty.
Yeah.
And then he would have his opportunity. And that to me tells me that was their game plan. You know, pressure, come forward, 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 forward. But coming forward, you got to throw punches. You know, you got to add to the piggy bank. Yeah, you got to add to that piggy bank in order for it to get filled up and it gets heavy. So I just say they got to go back and they got to rethink strategy, you know, in all phases.
He has a great offense. He just didn't know how to set it up. But yeah, I mean, I appreciate
the
quick take. I know it's short on time, man. I just want to congratulate y'all on another good year leaving in the ring, man. Y'all keep it up, man. It's a cool show.
Hey, appreciate it, brother. Thanks,
man. Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, there's something like there's two older trainers in they're ex fighters in the gym and watching them when they work the bag or they move around, there's something that's kind of like missing from fighters today. They both talk about it. The bounce is what they call it.
Right.
And it's like that kind of that forward momentum that guys used to have. Like, they just kind of were in a constant rhythm moving, and that's what had to be. That's what Pacquiao was trying to be again. It's what he used to be. You know, that bounce, that move. And you're constantly perpetual motion, and bang, 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 all your punches come off of that. But the other guy never knows where they're coming from because you're constantly in this bounce.
And not the bounce that when he landed on the canvas, guys, you know. We're talking about the other bounce.
He didn't bounce that time. He just landed. Boom.
God, what a nasty land. What a nasty land, man. But
it was like a safe that you were dropping on somebody, you know. Like, it missed, but he just landed.
You know, the first time, you know, witnessing it, you go like, oh, my God. But then the second, third, and the fourth, and the fifth, you just can't help.
It reminded me of, like, when Cintron went out of the ring, because it happened on the far side of the ring.
Right, yeah.
And so you were like, what was it? Hang on a second. And then you realize, like, Mark had run across, you're like, he's running across the way Sergio ran across when Paul Williams was knocked out.
Yeah, yeah. When that happened, my 11-year-old, when he had a chance to watch it, he goes, when Manny was just going straight down, my boy goes, ooh, a penny.
Well, I think what happened is he we never really talked about this. We haven't had the show. He moved forward the way he always does.
Double that jab like he always does.
And he bumped foot. Like people said, like, Marquez stepped on his foot. To me, it looked like he jammed his lead foot into Marquez's lead foot, and it pitched him forward just enough, and boom, he threw the punch.
Yeah.
It was over.
He fell into that punch. I mean, he was moving forward,
and his body
kept
moving forward, but his head stayed where the punch was. It was like such a short – I've thrown that punch so many times on fight night, you have no idea.
That punch, Marquez had been looking, not just alone in this fight, all the other three, he's always been looking for that punch. And big difference was finally Marquez stood his ground and he waited. Because a lot of the times you watch those other right hands that were thrown, he's literally backing up because he was trying to clip him to keep him off of him so he doesn't get the return. This time it was basically a different Marquez where he was like, I'm going to get the return regardless. I'm hurt. I'm busted up. I'm bleeding. But I'm going to stay on the ground and I'm going to throw the punch.
He landed the fight night haymaker.
Yeah.
Like the counter. It's interesting too. It's just like the rules of chance in the universe. These guys fought so evenly, like so many times. Like Pacquiao could have knocked him out in that first round. Any other ref may have stopped it, but it didn't. And then they fight to, like, this draw, and then the other two fights are the way they are. it took this many rounds for like that moment to appear and for him to capitalize and like do it so big. They've run like all the gamut of choices. It'd be interesting to see the fifth fight. I actually wasn't that into this fight until, well, as we got closer and the memo stuff kind of built. The fifth fight, I'm very intrigued. I'd like to see Pacquiao, see if he can get his get back. It's like Lennox Lewis with Rahman, you know? Can he pull it all together and get him back? I mean, some people say, well, this proves that Marquez was greatest all along. I gave him the last two fights, and I could argue that he won the first fight.
If it happens, definitely we're gonna watch it, because you want to find out whether or not did Pacquiao get Vargas? Is he going to have that, you know, when somebody touches it, he goes back to sleep, or does he redeem himself and he gets his, redemption by knocking out Marquez? It's a completely different discussion for us here on Leave a Ring. We're up to our minutes here. I want to thank everybody that tuned in and supports us again for another year. We much appreciate it. We love doing this. We love going on the airwaves, talking boxing and breaking news and, chopping it up with the fight fans out there here on Leave a Ring. Again, Happy New Year's. My brother, Happy New Year's. I'll see you next year. Everybody else, we'll talk to you guys very soon next year.
Dude, yeah, Dave, great year. Thanks for everything, man. You really had my back this year. You really like needed to have my both you and Steve had my back in ways that I couldn't imagine, you know. So thanks.
Hey, likewise, brother.
All right, guys. See you next year.
See you next year.
All right.